Folks, I'm going to get started. I'm expecting three more of my colleagues, actually four more on their way. I know I have one absent colleague. But let me take a moment to introduce myself, go over our protocol for the evening, and we'll try to get started as quickly as possible. Again, I apologize. The Zoning Board of Appeals is also meeting tonight, and we try to share the chamber with the ZBA as much as possible. We have the larger number of people here tonight, so we get the chamber. So with that, my name is Mark Laredo. I'm a counselor at large from Ward 7. I chair the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee, and we are being audio taped tonight. To my immediate left is Counselor Jim Cody, counselor at large from Ward 3 and a member of the committee. In front of me is Counselor Susan Albright, counselor at large from Ward 2. I'm not a member of the committee, although formerly a member of the committee, and certainly very well versed in land use issues. To my immediate right is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, who's the Councilor at Large from Ward 2. And then I have several staff members here with me this evening. Neil Cronin, Alexander Anand, Michael Gruber from the Planning Department, Robert Waddick, and Rita Young from the Legal Department. Nadia Khan is our committee clerk. We have five items on our agenda tonight. The first one is a very routine one, but Ms. Young, can I take a vote if I only have, I have four. All right. Councilor Greg Schwartz, Vice Chair of the Committee, Councilor at Large from Ward 6, has joined us. Our first order of business is 193-16, Newton Highlands Neighborhood Area Council requesting a temporary one-day license to hold its 41st annual Newton Highlands Village Day on Sunday, June 12th. Anybody presenting on this one? Is there anything here that I need to know about that's not completely routine? Do I have a motion to approve? Councilor Schwartz is no public hearing, correct? All right. Councilor Schwartz has moved approval. All in favor of approval? Four in favor, none opposed. The item carries. We then have four other items this evening, which are obviously more substantive than the last one. The first is 129-16. This is a special permit petition to exceed FAR 23 Howe Road. Richard Severini, Ward, this is Ward, excuse me, 8. This is a matter, colleagues, if you recall, was before us several weeks ago. It went to the full board, and prior to the full board taking it up, there was a request that some of the design of the building be changed, and I felt it was more appropriate to have that come back before us so we could at least vet it in committee rather than try to do business on the full floor. So I'm going to ask Attorney Morris for the petitioner to come up. Before you begin, Mr. Morris, I'm just going to note we have three other items on this evening after this. The first is 27 Waverly Ave. It's my intention to take that up next. We then have the Newtonville Avenue 255-257 project, and finally 288 Walnut Street. We're going to take them up in that order. I anticipate this one will be fairly quick. The Waverly Ave one will probably take somewhat more time. I do anticipate that the bulk of our evening, probably beginning no later than 7:45 to 8:00, will be Newtonville Avenue. So with that, good evening, Mr. Morris.
Mr. Michael. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I'm an attorney with offices at 57 Elm Road in Newtonville, and I'm here representing Mr. Richard Severini on his High Road petition. You may recall that at the last working session, the committee voted 4 in favor and none opposed and 3 abstentions to refer this matter out. One of the abstentions was Alderman Crossley. Alderman Crossley had approached me in the interim between then and the board meeting last about whether or not the width of the building could somehow be reduced. I know that she has written an email which I trust each member of the committee has read with respect to her reasoning for this. And in that good faith attempt to respond, I discussed the matter with my client, and we agreed to make two changes to the building, taking a foot out of the garage, and a foot out of the other side of the house. Actually.
Thank you.
This is the garage side of the house. The garage is 22 feet wide. We actually took out 1 foot, 3 inches actually, out of the garage, and we took another foot out of this side of the house, where the house jogs back in at the fireplace. We pulled that in. The result is that now both halves of this building have been moved from 22 feet to 21. We did that largely in an attempt to achieve a greater setback with our neighbors to the right on Howe Road. The proposed setback is 8.2 feet. The allowable setback is 7.5 for an old lot, but Alderman Crosby felt strongly, and we concurred that we'd do whatever we could to basically pull this building further away from the neighbors. And so as a result, the setback will now be 10.0 feet. With a revision to the plans, with a corresponding decrease in the floor areas above on both sides, so that the requested relief of 0.64 has now been reduced to 0.62.
Thank you. Questions for Attorney Morris from the committee? I'd like to hear a little bit from the planning department. Any thoughts on this change? Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Attorney Moore stated, this new dwelling will be in excess of the required dwelling to the neighbor to the west, which was a matter of concern, and the FAR has been lowered. So the planning department, with those two changes in mind, would like to hear any recommendations or questions from the council or the committee.
I guess my question for the planning department is, this is significantly over the FAR, and I understand that this is a reapproval essentially of something that a prior board did with different standards. If this were coming to you anew today without having been approved previously, what would the justification be for exceeding FAR to this amount?
The justification would be that the significant portion of the FAR is due to the below-grade basement and garage, which the house that was raised previously did not have a garage, it was just a carport. So the house that is proposed is similar in nature to the house that was raised, but with the addition of the garage.
So I think it's important that we develop it for the record in here, so I want to be clear. With the carport previously, that would not have been considered part of FAR?
Correct. The carport does not count towards FAR.
All right. So we're enclosing an area that was already covered, so to speak. That's causing a significant change to FAR, and the others that were counting a significant portion of the basement?
The basement and the attic as well.
Okay. And again, is that because of the topography of the site?
No, that is because the attic was not counted, and the attic now is counted because it is a half story and I believe habitable.
So I guess I'm going to ask the penultimate question because I'm going to get asked this at the full board hearing. If this came in as it has come in now with no prior history, would you still be recommending approval?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Questions from my colleagues? Councilor Schwartz?
One question based on, I guess we had an email from Alderman Crosley stating that in addition to the setback change that the petitioner made, that there was a question about the dormer?
That's correct. We're actually going to reduce the width of the dormer somewhat as well. So the exact distance is yet to be determined, but based on the construction drawings.
And so what are the parameters? I mean, what's
the dormer now measures 19 feet, and we are proposing to take at least 2 to 3 feet, reduce that by 2 to 3 feet. It'll result in further small FAR reduction, but really the significance is the massing on that side of the building.
Right. Okay, so that can be part of our order. That'll, if we stay within that, the framework that you're
describing. That's correct, yes. I think that actually Alderman Crosley has suggested some language in her email. The only difference that we had, she said 10.2 side yard setback. We've determined that we can't achieve that because we can't move it any closer to Jane Road.
The 10.0 is what you're proposing.
10.0 is fine.
Great. Okay. Chairman, at the appropriate time, then we'll put that in the condition.
Do we need to change the board order at all, or can you just craft that appropriately, Ms. Cohen?
I can put something in the board order about the width of the dormer as well. The board order has been instructed to require a 10-foot setback to the western neighbor.
Okay. All right, good. Public hearing on this has already been closed, so is there a motion to approve?
Well, just one last clarification on that. So I think that because the plans, you know, are not being changed, there was something about a consistency ruling that might be required. Will we specify that as well in the order?
Yes, the petitioner will seek a consistency ruling from ISD.
So if we make a note that we have kind of anticipated, that would be helpful, I think.
Okay, good. I have a motion. I'm sorry, Councilor Ripoff. All right, I'll take it from Councilor Ripoff. Motion to approve. All in favor of approval. 5 in favor, none opposed, 3 absent. It passes. Attorney Morris, thank you very much for coming back this evening. It's helpful.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Right. Our next item is 97-16. This is a special permit petition for 27 Waverly Avenue. Alice Schaefer requesting a special permit for a common dwelling where inhabitants will share common living space at 27 Waverly Ave, Ward 1. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Alice Schaefer, the owner of 27 Waverly Avenue, and this is our representative, Mary Lise Connolly.
Good evening,
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
I think please stay up there in case there's any questions, but I think we have taken this through now a number of iterations over the course of the last couple of weeks, times you've been here. Let me do this. Why don't I see if there's any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition, and then I'd like to close the public hearing, entertain a motion to act on the petition, and then I think we can work on the board order. So, is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Come on up, Ms. Fever. Good evening.
Good evening. Captain Phil Grazer, 258 Mill Street in Newtonville. I just have a question about this. I just happened to be at the hearing the last time when this was discussed, and just one thing about it bothered me. I've been thinking about it ever since, and that is, I don't understand why this group, in seeking a special permit, should be allowed to have more individuals in the building than they would be able to have if they didn't have the special permit.
I think the short answer is that's why you have to have a special permit to be able to do it. You could not do it as a matter of right.
Yeah.
By way of explanation, you could have other people in your house, unrelated adults, as a matter of right, up to 3 others, total of 4. If you're going beyond that, you have to come to us for a special permit. That's the simple rule.
But it's per unit, right?
Is per unit that they're seeking the relief for. That is correct.
I have nothing against this group and the imaginative thing they're trying to do, and I love the fact that they're trying to save an historic structure. I'm just a little bit concerned about overcrowding and the precedent this would set. Aside from that, I support what they're trying to do.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Seeing none, do I have a motion to close the public hearing? So moved by Councilor Carter. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 5 in favor, none opposed. I know this is Councilor Lennon's ward, but he's been delayed in traffic. I'd like to entertain a motion to approve so we can at least put a board order up. Councilor Ripoff is a motion to approve. Ms. Young, do you have a draft board order for us that we can look at? Good. Could you speak into the mic a little more? I don't think it's on yet, fully.
I drafted the board order as a result of a discussion that had gone on at the last meeting, which suggested that there was support for this association of persons based on what had been represented as to the organization and operation of the proposed association, which is that there will be a nonprofit. It will own the house, which will still have two dwelling units in it, and that there would be an association of persons organization that would require certain things for the members to do in order to be a member of the association. They had to actually make a financial investment and have an ownership share and occupancy in the association of persons, and that's somewhat unusual. And there was also an agreement to cap the size of the association of persons, the total size in both units, at 14 adults. Again, the association as described might include families, which could have children as part of that family, which would not count towards the cap of 14 unless those children were 18 years of age. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the general broad outline of the conditions in the board order. The other thing is that all members would have to be a minimum of 18 years of age in order to be a member of the association.
So can I just give a point of clarification, if I could? The member, each adult has to be a member of the association?
No, they do not have to be a member, but each adult does count towards the maximum occupancy at that address.
And how many, who has to be a member? One person from each family unit, or how does that work?
I think we can ask the petitioner. I believe that there'd have to be at least one family member who would have to be a member of the association, one member of the family, in order to be able to live there. But we can ask for that clarification.
Well, I just want to follow up with you if I could. So when you say family member, do we mean immediate family member? Is that a defined term in our ordinances?
No, family members are not defined in our zoning ordinance, but it would use the standard understanding of who a family member would be. In this instance, it would be a parent, a spouse.
So just so I'm clear in the drafting, good evening, President Lennon. I understood you were late in traffic. And we've been joined by Councillor Ripoff, Councillor at Large from Ward 8, a member of the committee, and Councillor Scott Lennon, Councillor at Large from Ward 1, and a member of the committee. So I just want to understand the drafting here. 14 adults, maximum number you can have in the two properties combined, the two units combined. You can have an unlimited number of minor children, but they have to be minor children.
That's right.
Okay. Pardon? And related,
obviously. But they'd have to be related to somebody who's living on the site and be a member.
And so, who has to be a member of the association? Is it one person from each family, or how is that defined?
You can certainly ask the petitioner. We haven't covered it in the board order, but I would assume that there will always be a member, that members of the association would have to include some member of the family.
That's correct. The reason why we're not requiring all 18 and over be members is we're contemplating there may be college-age children who use the house. For example, my two daughters are in college. If they're residents, but they're not members, they won't be members of the co-op.
But they count
towards the cap. They count towards the cap. They also count towards the current, count that we told you and our current usage.
So I'm just going to suggest this is new for us, as we said before, and I think whatever drafting we do here is going to be somewhat of a precedent for what we do going forward, number one, and number two, at least for me, I want to be very clear that if I vote in favor of this evening, I don't want anyone to think I'm going to necessarily vote in favor of the next one. I'm going to take each one on their particular set of circumstances. But I want to just understand, so it's one member of each family unit is a at least one member of his family unit is going to be a member of the association?
That's correct. And we actually contemplate that ideally, if it's a couple, both members of the couple be a member of the association, because they need to be engaged and committed. And so that we really are just we just don't want to obligate young adults.
No, I don't think we're asking that. I'm just trying to think through. Why don't we do this? Let's go through the findings if we could, and then when we get to the conditions, maybe we can wordsmith it a little bit if that's okay. So why don't we go to the first finding, if that's okay with my colleagues?
And again, I can either read it or go through it, but it's that's not the first condition.
This is not the first finding?
No, not on my draft.
The conditions are on page 3?
But this is a finding.
No, this is not. That's not what I sent out.
Let's make sure we're all operating off the same document. I don't have with me the first page. Do we have the first page of the findings?
Yeah, I'm being told by Neil that what's in the PowerPoint doesn't have them in the same place that's in the board order, so that this one right now is not one, it's 3. But
all right, why don't we go to what you have as one, Ms. Young?
Okay. What number one would be based on the draft articles of organization.
Okay, so this is our first finding. Let's work off that, okay?
And again, what I'm trying to do is establish the basis of the interest that the associations of persons are expressing and the sorts of documents that this committee's looked at. If somebody questions why is this association of persons different from the next group of unrelated college kids that you come in. So it's stating out exactly what the basic tenet of organization is for this particular association of persons.
Could we add something in here that requires that at least one member of any family residing in the building be a member of the association?
I think that's more appropriate in the conditions.
That's fine. That's, okay.
I can show you where we put
that. That's fine. I'll wait. So, colleagues, any comments on the first item, first finding? Okay, let's go to the... I'm sorry, Councilor Schwartz.
I'm sorry. It's just... I know that this is all what's intended. It just seems like it's a lot of detail for now. Are we locking them into this environmental sustainability, intergenerational? Is that...
This is simply a finding, but I thought I understood that there was a very... there was a real interest in terms of the Land Use Committee of being able to distinguish why this particular organization is being considered for an association of persons as opposed to the next one that comes down. There is nothing in the conditions which actually speaks to and this level of specificity.
Personally, I think this is actually very important so that we are able to distinguish when we get the next one, which is in a very different location, which doesn't have transportation, which is not in other...
I understand the purpose, I guess. Without it being in conditions, though, I guess it has no weight.
You're absolutely right. It is not binding that they continue in this particular format, but the points that are important for the zoning controls are part of the conditions, and we'll get into that.
But I think it allows us, if in the future we have another petition, to explain why we might act in a rational fashion differently than we're proposing to act here. Is that right, Ms. Young?
Right.
All right. Let's go to the next one, please.
Number 2 is that the site is an appropriate location. That's it for the 2-bedroom. Again, it's pointing out what we've been told in terms of this application, that you've already got 2 existing units. Those existing units already have a large number of bedrooms, and they're being occupied by families with lodgers at the current time. But you're not going to be adding any additional dwelling units as a result of the approval of this special permit. And the total number of bedrooms also will not exceed 10. And it's noting that this use is actually going to help facilitate the preservation of this existing structure.
Okay. All right, thank you. Questions on this finding, anyone? Let's go to the next one, please.
The next one was what was there first. It's the associates of the persons will have a maximum number of 14 adults. Also, that is then one of the conditions that's going to be included. So that 14 adult cap is going to be a condition. It's not just a finding.
I think, Ms. Young, yes, you would require 14. I think you're missing parking stalls.
Parking stalls is, oh, sorry, this might be, the parking stalls also relate to the number of persons. As you recall, the number of parking waivers that was originally being requested was based on 20 adults being present, and the Association of Persons requires one parking stall for each adult. The application has been reduced from a maximum of 20 adults to 14, so the actual number of parking stall waivers that they need is likewise being reduced.
No, but I think in the second line it says require 14. I think you're missing the word parking stalls.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't require parking. Yeah, it says my copy. It's not up on the PowerPoint.
Oh, all right. Well, you caught it already then.
I'm sorry
about that.
My copy. It is talking about the 14 parking stalls. Five are being proposed, so you've got a waiver of 9 parking stalls. Some of those are being located within 5 feet of the street, and we're finding that, again, the number of parking stalls waiver is justified both because of the fact that there is the commitment to the sustainable living, but more importantly, the transportation at this area for mass transit is extremely good, and that's one of the commitments that the Associations of Persons is making. They're also making a commitment to do shared use of vehicles that are on site. They're committing to a cap of the number of cars that can be on site, and you'll see some of this reflected in the conditions itself, not just as a finding. So this is a finding that's supporting the reduction in the parking stalls and the reduction and the waivers for the parking dimensional control.
Questions or comments on this finding, anyone? All right, seeing none, let's move to the next one, please.
The last one is, you know, the association and the common dwelling. This is the one that talks about this particular format for living being consistent with the comprehensive plan. And again, it talks about the fact that there has been a shared living arrangement functioning at this site for some years, and also that we've considered it carefully over a number of public hearings. So, again, that's a question of you being able to explain to your colleagues why this one may be different from the future association of persons applications that you might get.
Councilor Schwartz and then Lipoff.
Just on the, actually backing up the other finding, just with number 3, sure. Something similar to the last line of number 4 might be useful, I think, just explaining that the same number of, a similar number of people have been living there and the parking demand has been met.
Okay.
You kind of get at that with the 3 parking stalls already there not causing a nuisance, but the overall demand of parking needs has also been going on and has been met.
Good, thank you. Councilor Lipoff, on 4, I appreciate what you're trying to do with the second sentence, but I don't want any implication that Land Use Committee doesn't carefully consider every project.
Okay.
So I probably would take that out.
Okay.
And the last, well, I guess the last sentence is factually accurate, and again, might distinguish this from another project. Okay.
Okay.
Any other comments from the findings, folks? All right, let's move to the conditions, please.
I'm trying, Alexandra, I believe that the standard condition in terms of the plan reference, there needs to be, have we gotten the revised plan yet for the parking? Okay. So there is going to be a revision of the plan to show the 5 on-site parking stalls in a slightly different arrangement than the plan that was filed. And I think that has been, we are covering that in condition number 7. So there will be a change on the plan references, but it's covered in condition number 7. Number 14, that's the one that talks about the maximum of 14 adults. And I can insert in this condition that as far as families are concerned, at least one member of the family will have to be a member of the association.
Okay. And is adult a defined term in our ordinances, or do we need to say over 18?
As a legal matter, adults are 18 or older.
Okay,
so
fine.
I think
so we're going to say in this one, no more than 14 adults shall reside in the common dwelling at one time, and then at least one member of each family unit must be a member of the association.
Yep. So we'll add that.
Does that work? Is that acceptable to you folks? Is that workable?
Yes, that's
all right. Do we want or need anything that talks about children who reside here, or can we leave that alone?
I actually did not think that there was any particular way to address it. It's hard to figure out the number of children. I think there's a self-limiting fact in the size of the building, though.
I could see somebody having to take in somebody else's child, too, and I certainly want to encourage that, not discourage that. So I think we probably best leaving it alone, if that's okay with the committee. All right. Okay, third one.
Number three, again, this is the extent to which the organization as it has been presented would still have some teeth in terms of the findings, which we do say that it has to be organized as a nonprofit corporation. The nonprofit is going to have to own the common dwelling. That's the two. We're all telling them that they're supposed to be operating as an intergenerational cooperative living association, incorporating the principles of environmental sustainability and an intentional shared life. This is coming right out of the literature. And that the members will have an ownership stake in the not-for-profit, make long-term commitments to reside and participate in the cooperation, in a cooperative be 18 years of age or older, and abide by a membership occupancy agreement.
Do we want to say something here that all members must reside?
I don't know about that, because I can't tell you right now if there might come a time when a particular member might need actually, for example, to go into a nursing care facility and still want to be a member. So I don't know that you necessarily need to be that specific about whether members have to be present on-site or off-site.
I would be concerned about the ability of a member to rent out his or her membership right to somebody else.
I don't think that's possible if the members have to have... Let me see how I could address that.
Councilor Lipoff, did you? No, but... I mean, it's a call for the committee. I think we're trying to work with something that's new for us, and I don't want to be in a situation where somebody has to be in a long-term care facility and we're saying you have to give up your membership. I don't think that's the intent. I think my intent here would be I would not want a member saying, I'm still a member, but I'm leaving for 4 years and I'm going to rent my space out to somebody else. I think that goes against the spirit of what we're talking about, but I'm open for discussion on that. Councilor Schwartz?
I'm not sure if we can get at this in the phrase there that members must take a long-term commitment to reside and participate. I'm not sure, maybe we should flesh that out a little bit, and that might get us where we need to go. What does take a long-term commitment mean in our view?
How about this? Must reside and participate in the cooperative and owner-occupant of the dwelling unit.
I think if what you're concerned about is a situation where a member might leave for some period of time and then a non-member and a non-family member would move in, and perhaps we can address it by saying that all the occupants either have to be a member of the family or a member of the association.
Fine. I think that's fine. That would cover it. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to create something that's not workable. Is that acceptable, ma'am?
Yeah, I think that's definitely workable.
Okay. Does that make everyone... That satisfies my concerns. I think that may be... Is that okay with you, Councilor Schwartz?
I think so. Does that take out the make a long-term commitment? Because I think that that's not entirely clear. It's a little bit vague.
I think there's a distinction to be drawn between someone saying they're making a long-term commitment and then getting there and deciding that, in fact, it's not going to work for them and they leave. So I can't define what a long-term is, and I leave that up, frankly, to the association, since that's one of their own guiding principles that they've identified. So I think you might want to simply let the cooperative association, who has to vote on if someone who comes in as a member, make that decision as to what a long-term commitment is.
I think the idea there is that would avoid a series of college students, you know, from the fraternity adjunct model, bequeathing every year to the next fraternity brother who comes along a place to live. I know that's not what your intention is at all, but again, I think the long-term commitment language would prevent that.
I guess my only concern is that if it's in a condition, I'm not sure how we enforce that if the definition is so loose. I mean, so the association says long-term commitment means a year. Okay, now that's what we're enforcing? Or if they say it's 10 years, now that's what we're enforcing? How do we enforce this?
But again, I think, to a certain extent, if one of the issues you're concerned about is whether the organization is actually functioning in a way that is imposing a burden on the neighborhood, that's when you get into an investigation as to whether or not they comply with the conditions of the special permit. If this is functioning in the way it has to date, which is one that seems to be fitting in with the neighborhood, and I believe I also know that I think the board of directors on the nonprofit includes members of the neighborhood as well, don't they?
That's correct.
I don't know that you need to get into deciding whether 1 year for a member is long-term or not, unless there's a burden that's being imposed. And
if I may, I guess to address Councillor Schwartz's concern, you know, I agree. We would not want to have a condition specifying the time frame, and I understand your concern about how do you enforce that? I mean, I think the language that Ms. Young proposed, it may be that members and or members of family must be a member of the association at any one time. With that, you might want to just take that language out. I don't know. I mean, we're going to be providing documents, our governing documents, to, the building department and the planning department, and you'll see later that we're going to be subject to yearly inspections. I think that will take care of itself, as part of the enforcement.
Or it might be simply, the something like the intention. I mean, it's basically just a statement of what we think is going to happen. It's not basically saying that we're going to enforce this. I just don't know how we're going to enforce a loose, vague term like that. It's basically an explanation of what we're expecting, but it's not actionable. Is it?
I guess I differ. If we saw over a period of time that we had a series of complaints that all the present residents are gone and it's turned into, fraternity row two, I think this would give ISD some grounds to say you're not fulfilling what the special permit intended. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. I think we're struggling with some vague language here to be vague enough not to bind these folks unnecessarily, but to at least put something in there to indicate intent.
All right, well,
if you want to think about it, we can...
All right, sorry about that. So now you're in trouble. Councilor Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair, on the spot emergency fill-in. I just had a quick question, probably for Weed on this one. This appears to be the one condition that addresses the organizational piece to the house. Is that true? It says it must be organized as a nonprofit.
This is the primary place for it, yes.
Okay. So my question to this is, should there be something in there? I know if the association ceases to exist, that this permit goes away. But should there be some other piece in here saying that there's a substantial change to the bylaws that we should be notified or somebody should be notified?
You're going to be looking at it annually. And again, the issue for an association of persons from the zoning perspective is really one of what is the impact on the surrounding area and whether there is something that is imposing a burden on the surrounding area. And I do think that if you see those zoning complaints coming up, it's no longer living this nice, quiet, shared car relationship in which people take mass transit and are instead spilling out into the neighborhood with more cars, that you'll be able to get in and do that investigation at that time. I think that's the way you need to address it, more than trying to say that if there's a substantial change, they've got to come back in for an amendment. That goes without saying. If they've actually changed their organization beyond what the conditions say, then they will have to get an amendment. But you don't have to say that.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Anything else? I apologize for that. Anything else on number three? Okay, seeing none, we've been joined by Councillor Jay Harney, Ward Councillor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee, and Councillor Allison Leary, Ward Councillor from Ward 1, not a member of the committee. Next, number 4.
Number 4 is the one that deals with the five stalls on site, the five parking stalls, and it also requires that the association of persons engages in car sharing or forgoes car ownership if the five on-site parking stalls are already being utilized. So again, I think the point there is that if you wind up with some member, for some reason, sneaking in that sixth or seventh car, it's going to have to go somewhere. And given the winter parking ban, you may very well find the complaints that are beginning to come in, and that's going to give you the opportunity to come in and look at whether or not there's been a violation of this condition.
Again, we're not anticipating any of this, but this is for future generations. All right, five.
Again, this was one that has been offered by the association that there be annual inspections by inspectional services to see if there's compliance with building and safety code requirements, and again, those are in the inspections of the areas that are occupied or used and controlled by the association, and there can be further inspections if there are non-compliance issues. So again, if you've got the spillover of cars in the neighborhoods or something's going on in terms of the turnover of the spaces that people are seeing at that site, it's going to allow you to go in and do an inspection at that point. I've got to point out that this is offered by the association. It is not required by either building or fire code.
Okay, yes, Councilor Ashenglass.
Sorry to take us back to number 4 here. The second sentence seems very prescriptive, that the members of the association of persons shall car share or forego car ownership. The outcome we're really driving at is that they're just not parking on the street. You know, should we just say that then? Because there may be a person with a fixed car, and they just pay for garaging somewhere.
We could be less prescriptive. This has been offered by the association itself in terms of what its membership obligations are.
So we're going to check to see if a fixed person is garaging a car somewhere else?
I'm not going to check if there's no parking that's going on. But it's going to be complaint driven, and I would leave it up to the association itself to decide whether they want to have members who are violating the terms of their membership.
Right. So that's really the city's concerned with the outcome, that there's not cars in the streets. We're not concerned with how they get there, which may be that, I mean, for all I care, seven of them are garaging their cars.
Or they may rent from the next door neighbors, and I mean, that's what you're getting at, right?
Yeah, the outcome that we care about is that there's just not cars on the streets, and I think we should say that as opposed to telling them that they have to car share or forgo car ownership.
So how does the committee feel about that? Would you rather strike the last sentence of 4 or keep it in? Some thoughts, Councilor Albright?
I mean, you could add a phrase which says, unless that car is housed at another location, legally at another location.
It seems like we're tying ourselves up in knots, and we really don't. It's not really.
I think all we can say is you can only have 5 stalls on the car.
You have 5 stalls.
Is that okay to take the last sentence out of 4? All right, why don't we take it out? Thank you.
Do you want the entire sentence, or do you just want to say that you don't want to have... I assume that you still want them to engage in car sharing.
I don't think that's for us to decide.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that the reason for going with fewer stalls is their commitment to doing that, but I don't think we should be telling people where they park their cars as long as they're doing it legally. Five, is there any question on five? All right, can we go to six then, please?
Six is the one that specifies what happens if there is, if the association of the person dissolves, if this one does, it's then going to revert back, the property will revert back to a two-dwelling unit.
Okay. Seven, any questions on that?
Again, that's just the call for the revised parking plan that we don't yet have.
And then anything else?
The last two are the usual boilerplate.
Okay. Yes,
oh, I'm sorry, going back to six.
Oh, sure.
And I'm just, I might just be fuzzy on this. So if the association of persons as authorized by the special permit is dissolved or ceases to operate at the site, what are the circumstances under which that would happen? Is that entirely discretionary on the part of the association, or are there some kind of definitions that it ceases to exist if...
Well,
half of it no longer have paid their membership dues. Is there anything like that?
Ceases to exist is really, if the non-profit organization, corporation, goes out of existence, or if it just ceases to exist, I mean, it's not operating. I don't care how many members it actually has or whether it's financially viable. The issue is whether or not there's a termination of this particular association of persons, either in fact because it's not operating at the site anymore, or legally because the nonprofit corporation has been dissolved. Either way, it reverts back to its underlying by right use, which is a two-dwelling unit building.
So there's no circumstance under which you could imagine a change in the tenancies that still the association could still exist as a nonprofit, but maybe not be operating as such. I mean, like, could there be half of the people living in the house be part of the association and half not?
I think they'd have to come back for a new special permit, and I think that's the whole idea here. I mean, we're granting it, at least my view, we're granting it because of a particular identifiable need.
Right.
There's nothing to preclude them from saying our association's completely changed and we want to have another special permit. But I think what Ms. Young is doing is trying to give a default provision.
I understand.
So we know what happens.
I guess I was just wondering if the halfway, like between current plans and it totally dissolving, can one imagine a situation where there's still like a rump of an association still going on with half the members, but the rest of them aren't paying their dues and they're not abiding by the earth-friendly precepts
but,
and they're...
But again, if there's a burden that's being imposed on the neighborhood as a result of the shrinking of the association of persons in some ways. The question is that noticeable on the part of the community such that it seems to be violating the terms of the conditions and it triggers an enforcement action to go in and look at what's happening on the site?
But what term, would that if that was happening, would that actually violate Term 6? Because Term 6 doesn't say that...
It might not violate. It depends on how much it's really not functioning.
Okay. So there's nothing in between full functioning and ceasing to exist. It just seems to me like if we're worried about it kind of devolving into a more...
How about this? Could it be dissolved or ceases to operate in its current form at this site?
I think that's what some of your other conditions speak to.
Okay.
In terms of the members having, you know, the adult members having to be... The adult residents having to be members, so
yeah.
You know, you wouldn't get that situation where you'd have.
Oh, but ceases to function as envisioned, or no? No,
function?
I don't know. It just seems like it's.
I understand what you're struggling with. I mean, I think I hear you. I hear you saying, "Is you know, what if it's just really not functioning as it was intended, but it still technically exists."
Right.
Or operates.
But again, I think that the other conditions are going to be cleared up. And it's possible at some point the Association of Persons may decide it's outgrown this house and it wants to go get a bigger house.
So I would see this condition as simply in the event that there's no association anymore, it ceases to exist, this is catching that situation.
Yeah.
But the other conditions will catch the rest.
Right.
You just want to make sure that the legal entity that you're granting the special permit to, that's the only entity that gets the special permit. It's not going anywhere. It's not transferring to.
Can we say something? Should we then say something that it cannot be transferred? Or can you say that was a special permit?
I'm not sure
you could say that was a special permit.
But again, if there was another new association that came on board, it would have to be matched up to the one that you granted the special permit for. In other words, it may not. I'm not sure what the name is, the name of the association.
ENTO Cooperative.
ENTO. So there's a second. That one goes out of existence, and there's a new nonprofit association that comes in and is embracing exactly the same principles of the first. But it's a different nonprofit, which could happen. It may have some of the same members or not, but it's a different nonprofit. That nonprofit, that new one, as long as it complies with the provisions of the conditions that are here and it functions in accordance with those conditions, could take on and operate at that site without having to come back in for an amendment. But it's got to function the same way, and it has to have the same principles embedded in its new nonprofit format.
Can we? I guess I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that. I mean, it seems to me what we're trying to do is grant a special permit for this association. President Lennon?
I just wanted to mention, I think it's worded just fine, to be honest with you. If that helps move this along a little bit. I mean, we could change it every single different way. I think it's worded the way that the law department worded it. I think it worth it. It's worded just fine, and I think that it's subject to annual inspections. It's going to be complaint-driven. It's the first one out of the gate, and I'm sure that if there's an issue, we're going to hear about it.
Okay.
I can only try to be looking for the committee's input.
Are we comfortable? All right. Okay. Thank you, President Lennon. Any other comments on the conditions? Seeing none, is there anyone who wants to say anything before we vote on this? I'm going to say something. I'm sorry, did you want to say anything? I'm just going to say briefly, I'm going to vote in favor of this, and I just want to offer a quick explanation as to why. I got to tell you, I wasn't initially as enthusiastic about this as perhaps some of my colleagues are, but I really want to commend the petitioners for their willingness to work with us, for their willingness and time they spent with the legal department and the planning department, for the thought that you've put into this. Clearly, you put a tremendous amount of thought into it. And frankly, I've been swayed by not only your presentation, but the folks, your neighbors, who've gotten up and spoken in favor of this petition and explained some of the benefits that you offer. I will note for the record, and I think I alluded to this earlier, although I'm going to vote in favor of this petition, I think it's a good one. I will personally look very carefully at future petitions of this nature because I think we need to proceed cautiously with them, and I think we need to make sure that a whole bunch of different criteria are met as we do so. So I just want to go on the record and say that. Anybody else want to add something? Councilor Leary?
I just want to concur with Councilor Laredo. I was very pleased to see this plan, and you've done such a wonderful job and worked with the city and your neighbors so well. I just want to thank you very much. I'm very intrigued by this model, and I'm so glad that Alice will be able to stay in Newton in her home for a long time to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to say anything? All right. We have a motion to approve by Councilor Lipoff. All in favor of approval? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in favor, none opposed. Thank you very much. We'll take this up at the next full board meeting. There's no need for you to attend, although you're welcome to do so. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Best of luck. Thank you very much. All right, next, what I anticipate most of you are waiting for, 48-16, this is a special permit. Petition for 255, 257 Newtonville Avenue. There's Storage Development Partners LLC, Norcross Trust. Ward 2. Attorney Schlesinger, are you are the Little League team do today?
Running 17-10, Mr. Chairman.
That's good to hear. Want to just update us? We've obviously all had this matter before us now several times. For members of the public, we've received lots of comments. We've done a site visit. So what I'm hoping to focus us on today is what if any remaining issues there are. We'll certainly have an opportunity for members of the public to speak again. It's my intent, I think, to try to at least close the public hearing this evening and then see how far we get with perhaps doing a draft board order. Go ahead, Attorney Schlesinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like this evening to summarize some of the materials which have been submitted since the May 3rd hearing and discuss our view of some of the open issues. Underlying all of the discussions, the basic concepts have remained the same. The site at 255 Houghtonville Avenue is zoned manufacturing land with manufacturing uses permitted, including storage use, which is allowed. The building has been physically pushed in its location as far to the west as it can go. That creates a need for additional relief, but it has also created setbacks of up to 70 feet from Lewis Terrace, where 15 feet is required. As a setback as a matter of right would be 15 feet, and we're providing up to 70 feet. The building has been pushed down into the ground, so the height faces the turnpike. It is 15 feet 6 inches high at Lewis Terrace, where a height of 24 feet is allowed. So facing the residential neighborhood in rough terms, the building is, as to Lewis Terrace, about half the height and about four times the setback as the ordinance would require. Doing that has required us to have a building which is on the turnpike side technically higher and technically three stories, requiring the relief with the FAR. We have submitted to you two packages. One on Friday in response to questions at the last hearing, and one submitted to you yesterday in response to the Planning Department memo. I want to highlight a few issues. We have provided a supplementary traffic study of planning horizons, Mr. McCurry's here tonight. We chose different dates because we had chosen previously what we thought was the annual peak around Labor Day weekend, but the conclusion remains the same in all the studies. This study in several days in May showed that we generated less traffic than the small amount which was generated over Labor Day weekend. And the storage use generates significantly less traffic than any other use in the manufacturing district. One primary benefit of this project is the traffic generation compared to anything else. The traffic projection is actually a reduction in traffic from the current use of the property. Currently, there is a 13,000 square foot building there, which is substantially vacant and houses several landscaping operations and office operations and a dog walking facility. You have received other data indicating that perhaps there are four cars per hour at the current facility. We counted five. We don't think the difference is material. We think that in either event, the future will be less traffic. We have also, in the current plan, corrected the calculation of height in the petition. We are seeking a height special permit of 3.5 feet. The building is 27.5 feet tall, where 24 is allowed. You have submitted an acoustic report by an acoustical engineer, which indicates that the noise the building will achieve, that the building will generate, is in the less than 3 dBA, which is imperceptible. The city standard would be 5. We are in the imperceptible range for noise based upon the baffling system, which was spec. We submitted a revised landscaping plan and a revised lighting plan. The revised landscaping plan shows 71 trees being removed and 137 trees being added, in addition to 28 existing trees being saved, 165 trees to be placed on the site. The revision notes 11 Canadian hemlocks, 15 feet high, specifically added along the Lewis Terrace frontage for screening in the May 19 revision. In addition to the 137 trees to be planted, the plans show 1,490 plants and shrubs in the habitat preservation area. We are very proud of the fact that this project will correct a currently non-compliant waterfront or riverfront area, and the Conservation Commission is very pleased, I'm sure, to have issued the order of conditions to get that area planted where it is now paved, cleaned up where it is now a mess, and the water going into Laundry Brook to be treated. We have submitted a lighting plan. Upon reflection, we had thought of not having lights on the Lewis Street side, but it seemed that that might make the building look either hulking or something, so we thought that low-level lighting would be better shown there. That's a choice which you can help us with. We thought it was preferable to no lighting or motion lighting. Yesterday we made a proposal on the issue of operating hours. We have suggested that the facility be allowed the most restrictive operating hours of any storage facility in the city, that the gate be operable from 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. However, as in other situations, it may be that the committee deems it appropriate to have a look-back provision, and we are not concerned about facing that possibility. If the committee wants to take a look in 2 years, or 1 year, or 3 years, and look at whether there is some standard of excessive use at 6 in the morning, we're happy to have that look-back and have a provision for an adjustment if it seems necessary. Our experience within the other facilities in the city is that that is not the case. We have noted that the planning department has made a comment on the roof. And we've given a lot of thought to the roof because we've heard the comment. At the suggestion of Mr. Hinterreger, actually, we believe that a portion of the roof can well be used for collection of rainwater to a cistern. This collection system, using the roof to collect the rainwater, will assist with the maintenance of the plants and trees on the site, since your board order requires that they be maintained. It seems to make sense that rather than use outside water to feed plants on the roof, that we can use the roof water to feed the landscaping being installed. The planning department also had a question about the color of the roof. On the samples, which on the April 27th letter, we provided color samples for the Carlisle system. I have additional copies of those if the committee would like to review them. It is clear that the lighter colors provide the greatest energy efficiency, but it may be that the committee would like to look as though it were green. I have set forth in the letter of yesterday the reasons why we do not choose to put plantings on the roof, which we think is just wrong in every way, but we would like to make use of the roof for conservation purposes, and expect to and hope that that's a solution which knocks off two birds with one stone. So I have also received a copy of a presentation which you may see tonight, and I applaud the participation of everybody who has taken the time to participate in this in these discussions. But we have to go back to basics. This property is in the manufacturing district. The best use for this property is to transition from some manufacturing use or what the ordinance allows to the residential. The proposal you have before you, both in its use and its traffic generation and its physical configuration and in the landscaping it's provided, is doing an outstanding job transitioning from the manufacturing district to the residential. The property has received an order of conditions from the Conservation Commission. The improvements to the area include not only the landscaping on the site, the water treatment, and the entrance, the closing of two curb cuts to consolidate into one, a reduction in the amount of on-site parking, a reduction in the amount of off-site traffic. These are all and an improvement to the degraded riverfront. These are all material improvements coming from this project. Storage is recognized as about the lowest traffic generator of any of the use categories. We did not agree with the ITE numbers. We didn't present them because we thought they were wrong. We presented counter-argument yesterday to those numbers. We have experiential data in the facilities in Newton indicating that the ITE numbers are significantly wrong. The Planning Department memo indicates that even if they are correct, the traffic generation is so substantially lower than the allowed uses that this is a very worthwhile element of the petition. And we want to note that the existing traffic issues at this intersection and the combination intersection of Eastside Parkway, Newtonville Ave, and Lewis Terrace are significant and ongoing. And everybody has heard about them from the speed coming down the hill to the angles taking what I've been calling the slalom curve from Eastside Parkway up Newtonville and left onto Lewis. So those intersections have problems. There's a history of issues there, history of accidents. It's a history that will probably be aggravated when the school is active by the city, Aquinas College. And this is something which the city as a municipality needs to deal with. What we can say about the storage petition is that it is going to ameliorate and not aggravate the situation. This storage facility, as proposed, will generate less traffic than any allowable use. We can count within one car or two cars as to whether it will be less than the current use, but it's a net plus in design, function, and traffic.
Anything else, Attorney Schlesinger?
No. I'll answer any questions that anyone may have.
All right. What I'd like to do is first hear, I think from the Planning Department, I'd like to get your thoughts as to where we are. I'm going to then open it up for public comment. So who's going to take this, Michael?
I think that Attorney Schlesinger has pretty fairly summarized the changes since the last meeting. Our concerns were conveyed in the memo of last week. Obviously, we have some disagreement with some items. We still have concerns about the roof. We are fairly satisfied that the traffic impacts will not be significant, considering it is such a low intensity use. Beyond that, we are more than happy to entertain any questions people have about the specifics of the project, but otherwise, our viewpoint stays fairly consistent.
Do my colleagues want to ask any questions of planning or the petitioner before I open it up for public comment, President Lennon?
No, you obviously we're going to discuss after public comment some things that we may hear tonight.
Absolutely. And
I know you mentioned earlier what the schedule might be because I had a couple of things that are still remain outstanding that I've mentioned to the petitioner's attorney that there may be a difference of agreement on, difference of opinion on, and I just want to make sure that we discuss those, you know, whether this meeting or at another meeting.
Well, why don't we do this? If there's particular issues that my colleagues want to raise now, why don't we do so before we take comment? And the reason for that is it may forestall or alleviate some of the questions or comments we may get from people. So, President Lennon, do you want to tee it up?
So I'll bring up a couple of things, and then and you know, obviously listen to the comments, and if there's more that I have, it'll be fine. Probably the three biggest things I just wanted to touch on first was the traffic generation. I think that most of us have been getting a tremendous amount of correspondence from abutters and interested citizens about the traffic generation. And while I personally agree that the traffic generation will be less, and I say that just because obviously of what I've read and what I've visually inspected at a number of these facilities, not only in Newton, but was able to visit a storage facility in Medford today, and hopefully we'll get to a couple more over the next couple days. But there seems to be a lot of concern about the numbers. And what I had proposed to the petitioner was to do an independent review of the numbers that have been submitted, in not trying to slow the project down or the petition down, maybe not necessarily institute a full-blown independent traffic study, but maybe an independent peer review that might be able to look at the difference in the numbers that have been submitted. I know that they don't look favorably upon this, but I still think that it's something that's warranted. On the hours of operation, I would strongly suggest that the hours of operation are scaled back, especially in the morning times. Again, I've relayed this so that the petitioner wasn't hearing this for the first time this evening. Based on a site visit that I had today, that some of the early morning facilities that are rented as an ability for contractors to store materials there and use that as a storage space. And that is something that I am strongly not in favor of because a lot of the emails that I've responded to, I've tried to explain to citizens that in a manufacturing zone, this would probably be one of the more benign uses. But if we're going to have contractors waiting to get into the storage facility to get their stuff, I'm not in favor of that. So I think that's addressed by, you know, discussing amongst the committee the hours of operation. And then lastly, I think one of the things that continues to be presented to us is a request for rezoning that is not in the purview of this committee. And I think that it's something that I personally would feel I would want the consent of the owner. And at this point in time, again, we're working under a set of guidelines and rules that's not under the, you know, a rezoning request is something that gets taken up separately, that would have to be voted by the council, that would have to have an affirmative vote of 16 members of the council, and at the same time, I think that to try to do that at this juncture would be cause for some serious legal matters with regard to what we're doing here in this chamber. So those are the three big things that I have right now, and I'm sure that there'll be more as we discuss this further.
Councilor Ashenclaw?
I want to strongly second everything that Council Lennon just said. And I've also made known to Attorney Schlesinger in my feeling that the operating hours should be scaled back.
Councilor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an operational question more so for the petitioner. And so I don't know what's about, but I couldn't find an answer looking this up, but this is the time of year when colleges are graduating. You have a lot of turnover in storage facilities and such like that. So I think that would be a peak of time. And then you look again in September when they're reloading. In the business model for these type of facilities, do they reserve X number of units for that purpose, or could it be potentially full and there would be no space for these turnover seasons?
They do not reserve them. They're considered short-term rentals, and they're looking for longer-term things. So the college, student population is not considered a desirable tenancy. So they wouldn't reserve any for them. It's not considered desirable.
So basically, the position is saying that they don't reserve a block, like there's not 200.
Correct. Yeah.
Councilor Albright.
A question about the cistern. So this would be a large thing on the top?
No, it'd be underground.
So the water's going to flow down and be
poured. The roof leaders from the roof would be pitched to roof leaders and then into a cistern.
Okay, that's good. The issue of people operating a business, Councillor Lennon referred to it, but I heard about a gardener who was running a business. Is there a way to prevent people from running their business out of the storage facility?
Well, I think that first is they don't have like phones in their units and things like that. I don't know if there's Wi-Fi in the unit. There's no sufficient power to run businesses. People can store things there. I think you tend to see that more in the roll-up kind of places where you drive up your truck, you roll it up the door, and then it's right available. The primary customers for these types of facilities, the other two facilities in Newton, are residential users. There are people who use them for storing inventory or other business uses. Highly unlikely that someone's going to use it. It's a very expensive office for that kind of space.
Okay. I think I had one more question. The peer review, well, this is actually maybe for later. I wanted to talk about the benefit or not of the peer review, but we can reserve that for extra public comment.
All set. Councilor Leary?
Can I ask if we can, couldn't we just prohibit a business being run out of a storage unit? Couldn't that be part of the requirements?
I don't know, but I don't think the concern is a business per se running out of a storage unit as much as a storage unit being used essentially as a warehouse for a business. I think that's the concern.
Okay.
I don't think you'd be running the business per se out of there, but you'd be using it as a
warehousing facility. I just want to concur with everything President Lennon had said, specifically the hours of operation, because I think it is so close proximity to homes. And I would be concerned about idling trucks waiting to come in early in the morning specifically. So I think the planning department's request to limit the hours of operation from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. is reasonable and perhaps should even be more restrictive. I just want to make some comments about the Attorney Schlesinger's response to the green roof. That I thought that all the applicants' objections to a green roof could be solved and it could work, and I don't think they've really explained why they can't do it. And I just want to say that it does extend the waterproofing membrane two or three times of the roof. It provides stormwater volume, rate, and quality benefits. It lowers the cost of heating and cooling the building, lessens the urban heat island effect. It improves aesthetics, and I think it's really important for the people up the hill because I've heard a lot of complaints. We are going to lose the tree canopy, having a green roof may mitigate that impact somewhat. And since it also adds some wildlife habitat, which could complement the native plantings that they're doing, so I would ask them to strongly reconsider the green roof option.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just I had two clarifications, really. One was perhaps the petitioner's attorney could clarify again. I thought I heard you say that in response to the concerns about contractors or whatever businesses using the storage units for their materials, that there's a distinction between the type of storage unit, the facility that this is envisioned as being as
opposed to one of the kind of multiple garage type units. Could you expand on that just to clarify for us? I mean, it sounds like from what I thought I inferred from what you're saying is that it would be difficult, and I'm not sure what type of units all the Councillor President Lennon saw today or earlier, but you're not envisioning the ability of contractors to drive up with their trucks and load up like motorized tractors from their units into the. Is this an internal kind of?
Yeah, they're all accessed internally. The loading dock leads to a elevator core. So once you get to there are units on the first floor down the corridor, but you don't back it up to your unit and then have direct access to it. So it's not as conducive as like the one out in Natick on Spoon Street, where you can see row after row of garage doors. You back up to the garage door, open it up, and that's not what this is. This is more conducive to a different kind. You may have to take the elevator up to the third floor and walk 100 feet or a couple of 100 feet down the corridor to get to your unit. You can do it. We're not going to prohibit somebody from keeping sales samples in their unit, but it's not the kind of thing you want to do every morning at 6 o'clock to get your equipment.
Like a tax attorney could keep his old files in there in boxes, but not his leaf blowers and tractors. What you're saying.
A real estate lawyer just tried to get one over at Needham Street and was on a waiting list, but yes.
Gotcha. I guess my second clarification that, I read through the description of the additional parking observations and intensity of use, I guess came out to 8.3 on average per hour trips, at least that not at the...
That was the 3 days of the Labor Day weekend.
Right. That's the maximum, I understand. So I understand the number of trips that you get that way seems small, but what did anybody measure the duration of the visit? Because I would imagine that if you're loading or unloading, that it's going to be, not an insignificant amount of time to carry your boxes or whatever in and out. So if you have 8 trips per, I think you came out to, every 3.6 minutes, one trip in and out, right? One trip every 3.6 minutes. If you're going to be there for 15 minutes at a time.
That would be in or out.
That would be what?
That would be in or out. The 8 trips would be one every 7 minutes coming in and then going out. So it would be 3.5 minutes would be an in or an out.
Okay, but so
the average, the mean stay in the storage facility is 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay, so 4 people come in and 4 people leave. Let's just round it down per hour. You'd have those 4 cars being there or trucks being there for 20 minutes at a time during that hour?
On average, yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you for clarifying that.
Anybody else want to ask any questions of petitioner or planning? Before I take comment, I'm going to add that I agree with the comments made by President Lennon, and while I generally understand that a storage facility is a less and perhaps far less intensive use than might otherwise be allowed on this site, although nothing would commercially be allowed without a special permit, but it is a manufacturing zone. I don't think we can just rezone it unless the petitioner would request rezoning. I am concerned about issues with people, at least I've heard some anecdotal email and also from President Lennon about early morning leases by contractors and others who are lining up with their trucks to get access to materials. That would concern me a great deal. That does not seem at all within the spirit of what has been described here. And I would like for one more information, although I wasn't initially in favor of it. I do think we need some more information from some independent folks, some kind of peer review to really look at what other storage facilities do, particularly in the early hours of the day. And I, too, would be in favor of narrowing the hours of operation, and I concur with Councilor Leary that even 8 o'clock in the morning might be a better time to start, so that we do not have this issue, because that's not what's been represented to us. I mean, what's been represented to us, quite frankly, is an extremely modest, low-intensity use, and the experience at other storage facilities is different than that. We need to address it, because that's not what this is proposed here. And I'm going to add, like Councilor Leary, really I'm going to urge that the green roof alternative be looked at far more carefully. One of the main objections to this building is because of its topography, you're looking right down at the roof, and the petitioner is asking for a far greater FAR than is allowed otherwise here. And asking for really quite a large building. And I don't think, in my view, a green roof, at least on part of this building, to engage in some mitigation, seems to me quite inventive and frankly appropriate. So those are my observations for the moment. No need to respond, Attorney Schlesinger.
I would like the opportunity to respond at least in part, if I may.
You can take a couple minutes, but I want to hear from the public.
I have heard the anecdotal stories about the storage, about storage facilities, and it dealt significantly with the property on Bridge Street. And the anecdotes are simply inapposite. The anecdotes refer to a parcel which is a multi-tenanted building. It is not a storage facility. There are at least 5 or 6 other businesses running there, including 3 moving and storage companies. M&M Moving, Boston Totem Moving, and Monster Movers and Storage all have facilities in the same building at 138 Bridge Street. We did not count that as one of the self-storage facilities because it's the wrong kind of property, and the trucks that are there in the morning are highly likely to be moving trucks, which have an entirely different pattern. This is not a moving and storage facility. It's not that kind of an operating business. It won't work. The loading docks don't work. The spaces and the access to it don't work. It's not that type of a business. This is primarily a consumer and family and household business, and we have 2 very comparable facilities in the city, and I believe that in both of the in both of the facilities that we have, on most days you could lie down in the parking lot at 6 or 7 in the morning and be pretty safe. So I think we're happy to have.
If that's the case, then what's the need for opening up so early?
There are people who need them. There are people who use it, and when it's a customer service business and people want it. And the impact on the neighborhood of the number of cars that could conceivably come at that hour, early hours in the morning, is nil. And I do note that in this facility as proposed, the driveway is at the west end of the property. The parking is down at the end next to the turnpike, and the access is. So it's and this is next to the place which is adjacent to the NEFCO building, which has a very as folks have pointed out in the material we received, there is substantial traffic coming out of the NEFCO building and likely to do more when it sells. This is going to be a net reduction from anything, and the amount of traffic which we are proposing to be in the morning is significant to the user but not significant to the community. And that is why we propose a look back, and we're quite happy to say we'll open at the hour, and then if somebody tells us that there's too much traffic there in the morning, we'll change the hours. But I think you can't know unless you try it, and we're happy to have that type of to have a look back and to have it be mandatory. Because our data, and if we'd like to send somebody out, somebody wants to get up and join me tomorrow morning, we'll go down to Moody Street at 6 o'clock and see what happens there. I'm confident what's going to happen tomorrow morning on Moody Street and at Needham Street. I'll go there with anybody who wants to go at 6 tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Attorney Schlesinger. Councilor Lipoff.
I stored my entire life's possessions for 14 months at Needham Street, and I went there twice. I dropped it off, and I picked it up 14 months later. That one has a drive-in. You can literally drive your car into the middle, get out, go onto elevators. This one does not have that. does it?
Well, it has a covered loading dock, so you can go in, you can go in frontwards or a big truck and go in backwards, and you pack into the area.
All the way into the building.
Yeah. Well, it's not four-sided, and the door doesn't come down, so it's open on two sides.
Well, you drive all the way into the building. This one is not that way.
No.
It is not. But once you get inside, it's the same kind of thing where you have dollies, and you go up in the elevators.
Oh, it's the elevator.
Right. This is not the type of place that landscapers or anybody is going to use. They would not want to deal with all of that.
Wouldn't think so. And the units tend to be smaller than they are in those big box things with the roll-up doors. And you can't store gasoline. That's another thing you can't do in these things. So the average visiting in these is, coincidentally, once every 7 months. The guy who's got it for 14 months is...
Unless there's somebody else who wants to speak, I'm going to take public comment right now. I think the point here, Attorney Schlesinger, that I'm not going to speak for President Lennon, but I think the idea is, while we appreciate what you're telling us, I think we're looking perhaps for some independent verification. Is that a fair assessment, Mr. President? Okay. Thank you. So can I have a show of hands as to who wish... I'm sorry, Councilor Albright, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to add about that peer review. So I think it goes beyond... I think Councilor Lennon was suggesting that someone actually look at the data that was already collected. I think you're talking about collecting new data, which is a slightly different peer review.
I guess what I want is I want to get some verification that what we're being presented and told here is accurate. And I used the word anecdotal earlier because it was just that, anecdotal. And I'm not suggesting that it's accurate or inaccurate or it's the same situation as to what the petitioner is telling us. It may be, as the petitioner says, quite different. But I don't have, and I think intuitively, I personally understand that a self-storage unit building is likely to have far less traffic, but I think it's a legitimate concern for us about hours of operation that some combination of what the President is proposing and some independent guidance to at least advise us, I think is warranted, and I don't know if the Planning Department has that expertise, quite frankly. If it does, I'd like to hear that.
So the memo we submitted last week, we used the ITE manual, which is what's considered the basic tool of planners and traffic engineers to estimate what the expected traffic and parking demand is. A peer reviewer would properly rely on the same data unless they're going out and going to specific sites and counting cars there. So we just use what essentially planners use to make a kind of estimate or projection.
Well, I'm going to leave it for the moment. I think I want to hear if it's okay with the committee from the public, and then we can talk as a committee as to what our next course of action might be. So could I just get a show of hands about who wants to speak this evening? All right. I'm going to start off on this side and move backwards. There's some very basic ground rules. Please limit your remarks to 3 minutes or less. Number one, you need to state your name and address. The second ground rule. Third, I'm going to urge you, if you have already communicated with us, either orally or in writing, if you want to be helpful to us, please do not repeat what was said. And if you can focus on what you can see are the issues that we're grappling with, that would be of even greater assistance. So with that, I'll start off with the first row. Come on up, Ms. Reaver. And we'll move backwards, and I'll go to the other side.
Kathleen Shell-Grazer, 258 Mill Street, Newtonville. I ask you to vote against the special permit for the proposed self-storage facility. The proposal does not meet the special permit criteria. The site is not an appropriate location for the proposed use. The neighborhood is mostly residential with a school, park, and many children nearby. The current zoning is a vestige of the earlier industrial uses in the area, most of which is gone. My understanding is the NEFCO site is for sale, and I understand that they're looking at a use that might be more compatible with a residential neighborhood than the one that's being considered here. This is an opportunity to transition to a more suitable use in a residential neighborhood. The proposed self-storage will adversely affect the neighborhood in terms of traffic, safety, tree loss, and the opportunity cost of not having a use that is actually beneficial to the neighborhood. The exaggerated size and mass of the proposed structure, possible only by special permit, would exacerbate the traffic and safety issues and cause the excessive tree loss. The proposed use will create a nuisance and serious hazard to vehicles and pedestrians. The area is already dangerous for drivers and pedestrians, including young school children. This use will make it more dangerous. The proposed use would bring many strangers into the neighborhood well into the evening. Self-storage facilities are known to have problems with some stored items being dangerous, drugs, weapons, or attracting rodents. Access to the site over streets is not appropriate for the types and numbers of vehicles involved. Newtonville Avenue is hilly, curvy, narrow. Add rental trucks driven by people unfamiliar with driving trucks, overflow parking on Newtonville Avenue, and cars swerving to avoid it, and there's a real safety concern. A new, full, independent traffic study of existing traffic conditions is needed. Maintenance and long-term operation will not contribute significantly to the efficient use and conservation of natural resources and energy. The proposed clear-cutting of trees on the heavily wooded site is an affront to the abutters and everyone who values the environmental and health benefits of trees. The impact of 1,025 climate-controlled units on power capacity in the neighborhood needs to be assessed by an independent expert. Since the proposal does not satisfy the special permit criteria, I respectfully ask that you vote to deny a special permit. And while it's true that Newton needs to protect and enhance its commercial tax base, the interest of residents in having a stability and a say in the built and natural environment of their neighborhoods and villages has to take precedence. This interest is particularly important in the case of abutters and near neighbors who will be left to look at what's left behind after the property owner and the developer have pocketed their millions in profits and moved on to other things. For most residents in Newton, their home represents the fruition of their aspirations and their hard work. Their home represents the investment of their lives into their community. They trust you, their elected representatives, to project what they value most, their homes, their neighborhoods, the stability of the quality of their lives. Residents elected you to protect them from development that harms those things. And while this proposed self-storage facility may seem like a low-impact use of the site to those who don't live near it, it appears to be extremely high-impact and objectionable to those who do. I'm sure you've seen the online petition signatures growing by the hour. I believe it's over 700.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, if you would.
Okay. A look back in 3 years won't take away a massive building that's a mistake. And I think that no one has asked Land Use Committee to look at rezoning this site. That's not the purview of land use. This committee has the discretion to grant or not grant a special permit, and if you decide appropriately not to grant a special permit because this project doesn't meet the special permit criteria, you are not open to lawsuits.
Thank you
very much.
No applause, please, okay? We're going to run a civil meeting. This is not a hearing session. Next, please. Anyone up here? Second row. Come on up. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. Cheryl Turner, 20 Harley Street in Newtonville. Just two things. One is a comment and one is a question. As we're looking at the hours of this facility and potentially restricting what the petitioner is asking, I'm wondering, I know that there is a landscaping company that is currently renting out space from the current Norcross property, and I know, at least from what I've seen, landscapers typically are up and out and on the road preparing trucks, etc. And I wonder if there is any restriction in terms of their current use, because my guess is that they're probably ones that are there on the road at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock getting ready to go out there. So that would be something I'd be interested in knowing. The second thing is, I again appreciate the concern of folks, but I received in my mailbox a flyer from the Newtonville Association, which I believe is illegal, that it's not, it wasn't mailed, it was just a flyer put in the box. And I don't think that's appropriate because it feels like it's stirring up the neighborhood.
Okay, next please. Anybody else in the second row? Come on up, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Eric Hearing, 16 Kingman Road. I've been a Newton resident since 1963. I'm here because I got a copy of the email that was sent by someone in Newtonville to the Newton Highlands Google group. And when I read it, I was kind of astounded. My background is in civil engineering and transportation. I have bachelor's and master's degrees in transportation and have worked in the field for 35 years. The email I saw alleged that there were huge potential traffic impacts from this project, and I know from my professional training and my professional work, and I was able to confirm in 10 minutes of searching online last night that the trip generation for self-storage is, in fact, the lowest you can get among manufacturing or industrial land uses. And something else that I was able to confirm pretty quickly that I haven't heard mentioned today is that the pattern of travel, the peaking of travel, is also lower for self-storage. And what that means is that instead of having large amounts of traffic in the morning and evening rush hour, the pattern is much more flat, and so there'd be less traffic generated at the times of the day when kids are going to school and the like. The last thing I'll mention is that the proposal to shrink the hours of operation, I understand why people don't want lots of noise in the early morning or late evening, but if you go from a 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. operation and change that to 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., you're basically increasing the amount of traffic during the day by something like 60%. And so that's just something to consider as you look at the hours of operation. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Next in the second row, if none, sir, come on up.
Good evening. My name is Mark Whittem. I live at 11 Pillion Court. My wife and I live there along with our three children. 11 Pillion Court is essentially at the northern end of Cabot Park, right off of Newtonville Avenue. So we're virtually across the street from the proposed facility. We are strongly requesting that you deny this special permit. We feel... I think it was very telling when I looked at what was the video that was prepared by the people advocating for this, that it showed the facility, some trees around it, the mass pike with a lot of trucks on it. It didn't show the park. It didn't show any residences around it. It didn't show my daughter crossing the street at night on a February morning going down Lewis Terrace to get to a bus stop, or my son coming up Lewis Terrace coming home from the synagogue on Adams Street at night at dusk with his friends. This may be the lowest possible footprint for a monstrosity of this size in terms of noise or traffic. For something of this size that is blowing past all of the permitting requirements that have been laid down in the past, it may be the best of the most low noise of all of those options. However, the best of an unacceptable design is still an unacceptable design. I think that, speaking as a professional mechanical engineer, albeit with no experience in the civil or transportation industries, I certainly hope that you do your due diligence. I know I heard talk about how the average acoustic level is going to be within certain levels. Speaking as someone who deals a lot of times with averaging and peaks, that, when things are getting, the peak noise, some peak transient, the average doesn't matter to me as much as these peaks. And it's simply, I would say, without, independent or peer review of documents that have been prepared, that it's simply, I certainly don't find it plausible that something of this size is blowing past all of these permitting regulations that have been put in place for a good reason. I think that there's really no choice except to decline this request for a special permit. This is a bad experiment to perform. It's to blow away the trees, put up this huge building and then see what the effect is. There's no do-over for us. We just bought the property there. Our kids are transiting that area all the time, and it does not stand to reason that the amount of increase in traffic is going to have anything other than an extremely negative effect. So I would ask you, don't let this experiment be performed on us.
Thank you, sir. Next, anyone in the second row, moving back another row, third row, anybody there wish to speak? Okay, move back to the row behind you. Come on up, sir, please. Oh, ma'am, I'm sorry. I thought there was someone else. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Mary Bell. I live on Oak Terrace. And I just want to...
What number of parents have?
24.
Thank you.
I am in favor of this project. This is private property. They have every right to sell it to whoever they want, and I think this is the lowest impact project that could possibly happen there. And I really don't have anything to add, except I want to know how many neighbors have landscapers who make more noise than the trucks and the cars that are going to arrive at this facility. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please, in that row, sir, come on up. And brevity, I will ask, is always appreciated in this committee. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Paul McGuire. I live at 18 Fisher Avenue. I've been a resident of Newton for 27 years. I understand the objections that have been put forward to this body, and it seems to me they've all been addressed, so I would very much favor the issuance of the petition for the permit. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next in that row, or the row behind it, I'm just going to, anyone in that row where the gentleman is, row behind it, anyone wish to speak? Come on up, please. Again, we're just going to go back row by row, and then we'll go to this side.
Hi there.
Good evening.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeffrey Kane. I live at 157 Nittenville Ave. I'll be brief. The problems with, you know, the flow through those roads have been well covered so far. And I think that the impact of a traffic study, not just measuring the number of cars going in and out, but the flow patterns of cars leaving the pike, coming up to, going over those, you know, over and around surrounding streets, going the wrong ways with people looking at GPS, through the various and sundry side streets that cut off where it forks and it's not clearly marked, need to be addressed. The one consideration that nobody has really mentioned is to limit or eliminate any access to the property from Newtonville Avenue. There is no reason, except in case of emergency, the trucks or anything need to come that way. If you limit only to Lewisville Terrace, the only way it can get in, that eliminates a lot of the cabot issues. It eliminates a great deal, but it would involve partially closing off the streets. That wouldn't need to be investigated by the traffic, but it's another solution. If you want to keep this a manufacturing area, make a road along the pike and bring it in that way, and then sequester this area off. The green roof and the other issues still need to be addressed because, again, people are going to have to look at this. This is a vestige of a long past area, and unfortunately for the people that live there and go every day, they're going to live with it. The hours of operation are a key factor. When they say they're going to close at 9, that means that if somebody's within the gates by 9 o'clock, they'll be able to leave whenever they leave. So 9 o'clock is the beginning of a suggestion. People within an hour, 10 o'clock, it was 10, it was going to be 11 by the time they leave. The types of activity, the inspections, again, a big problem. Parking within the unit, they wanted mitigation of parking duties, parking requirements. The problem with that is that the trucks need to be on their premise outside the gate for the early morning arrivals and later time. So they need additional parking outside their gate on their property where trucks and such can gather and not be on the streets in Newtonville. And I think this and a number of other issues for safety is the primary reason. You talk about a burden. This is the people who live on the street primarily think that this is a huge burden to the community. They think it's a public safety issue. They think it's a health issue. And that's why we're requesting that you deny the permit. If they want to build something that is scaled to the property, that fits the zoning requirements, which were put in place for a reason, that fit the parking and fit the space for noise, then that's one thing. But they're asking for a huge extension. Again, this property has been there. I was looking at zoning maps going back 100 years. It's never been used for anything like this in the past 50, 60, 70 years, you know, since the railroads were there. And even then, they didn't use it much, and it was access from across the railroad. The pike wasn't there. So this is a vestige that's stuck in the middle of a very residential community with tons of foot traffic from children, playgrounds. The playground shut down at dusk.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
Absolutely. All the businesses in the area, all the businesses that work there currently, shut down at dusk. They operate during normal hours. This business does not do that. It's 7 days a week. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next in that row, come on up. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Harry Santafilis. I live at 302-304 Newtonville Ave. We've been there since 1981. We own a business in Newtonville. So you guys are like me and Alan here. Since this last year, we're chasing each other around. We're going from the Austin Street to the Orr Building to now in front of my house. How tall are you? Are you about 6 feet?
I wish I was.
Hey, let's say you were 6 feet. Can you fit about 8 of you up here, 6 of you? People don't understand the size of this building. Let's say this is 40 feet high here. Picture this 4 times, 5 times this size in front of everybody's house. And then see how nice it is to live there. You know? I don't think it's that pretty. You know? And, you know, we're trying to beautify Newtonville by adding storage units. So we make 200 apartments, so we got to give them units, storage units to store this stuff. Because it's so small, they can't afford to put stuff in anywhere. I mean, come on, guys. Let's be realistic here. Yes, the Norfolk people need to sell their property. I understand that. And I wish them luck. They should sell it. But let's think of something better to put there than something that's, you know, monstrosity like this. Look at this place. It's about 40 feet. You're the architect. Is it 40 feet high? I think so. So, thanks everybody for coming. You know, you don't like to hear me. I don't like to hear some other stuff, but that's okay. Everybody's happy. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Next, please. Come on up. In the row behind that gentleman, anybody on this side who wishes to speak, come on up, please. Good evening. Is there anybody else on this side after that? If you just orderly come up as you go. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is William Resner. I live at 72 Fuller Street in Wadman. As a 46-year resident of Newton and as an architect, and as a steering committee member of the Newton Villages Alliance, and as a one-time resident of 314 Newtonville Avenue, about half a block away, I'm here today to seriously question this proposal and not allow it to go forward if I had a vote. Regarding the green roof idea, Frank Lloyd Wright once said that physicians will bury their mistakes and that architects or designers can only plant ivy. I would suggest and second some other people talking tonight about the possibility of changing zoning here. This is not consistent, no longer consistent with this residential neighborhood. The proposed building is completely out of scale. It's a huge, ugly, and massive block that is essentially windowless, maybe only 18 feet high on the Newtonville Avenue side, but there's not a window in this thing. And it's not consistent at all with a residential neighborhood. And it wouldn't be an improvement here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, come on up.
Hi, my name is Sarah Van Horn. I live at 399 Newtonville Avenue. I have a number of concerns. They've been brought up already, particularly the early hours. My fear, like others have mentioned, is that we're going to have, due to the small number of parking spaces as well, there's going to be a line of trucks or cars waiting to come in and get what they need in the morning. I think that needs to be addressed. I'm also concerned, as others have mentioned, about the green roof. I think that needs to be looked into as well, and I would strongly advocate for, as you said, some external review so that we can see the traffic patterns going in and out of that area. Others have mentioned it's already a difficult area for people to drive through. People get, you know, they go the wrong way. They're going too fast up and over that hill already. There are kids there all the time. I think looking into maybe adding an access road that's not on the Newtonville side is important as well. I just think that there are a lot of questions and concerns, and we're talking about going way over. They're asking to go over what they should be allowed to do, and I think that they should have to justify why that's appropriate and come up with some type of alternative. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please come on up.
Hi, Lisa Van Horn, 299 Newtonville Avenue. My concerns are large. It's a residential neighborhood, and although you say this isn't your this isn't a space to talk about zoning changes, you have the ability to stop this going forward so that this can be readdressed. We are not a manufacturing area. And we talk about the Garden City, and yet we're going to put in something that is colossal and out of scale and inappropriate. If any of you have driven on Newtonville Avenue lately, and I don't know how you went 14 months without touching your things in storage, but you must have been out of the area. If you were in the area and you were on Newtonville Avenue lately, you would see that it is highly congested, that there is more traffic. It is not meant to have parking along Newtonville Avenue, and it is consistently parking where you can't even get in and out of driveways. The idea that we're thinking about, because something has was in a past life in manufacturing area, we're trying to upgrade all of Newton, and we're trying to make it a more beautiful place. And instead, what we're going to do is do something that don't walk away at the end of the day. And if it isn't a good thing, and if the roof is not appropriate, we're still stuck with it. You can cut down 100 trees and put in 200 more, but I'll bet you you're not putting in 100-year-old trees. I bet you're putting in the stuff I put in my front yard just about that tall. We need to be looking at this in a bigger picture, and you can't get a special permit and ignore the fact that this is not appropriate for the area that we're in. It's near schools. It is not the kind of thing that will improve the place that you live. It's our home. It's not just on the edge of a manufacturing district. It's our home. It's already a bad enough street because of traffic. Don't let this happen. It's not possible.
Thank you. Next, please come on up, sir.
My name is Donato Butella. I live at 165 Newtonville Avenue. I'll be really brief. I just want to address some of the things that were said about the materials that we provided to you. One of the things to consider when you do traffic is not just a load factor in the ITE spreadsheet, but the actual size and volume. This facility is humongous. The reason you get a high number is because there's a lot of units and there's a lot of square footage, even though the factor is low. Also, the comment that the ITE handbook gives you height, you know, numbers and stuff, it turns out that their own self-storage trade organization numbers give twice as much threats as they're saying. We also created our own, or actually collected our own data that shows that the current use actually would be half the use of the self-storage facility, which is completely the opposite of what they say, which is a current use is actually higher. So what are we really talking about here? The developer could actually build a facility now by right if they just do the 47 parking spaces and they set it up with the right SRSAR. Why won't they do that? Because they want to maximize the space. By maximizing the space, they're creating this traffic problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else on this side? Come on up, Ms. Kessinger.
Dr. Kessinger, the 174 Newtonville Ave. Why doesn't the city of Newton buy this property and solve the problem, both what is being sold and the other property, and solve everybody's problem?
Well, They have the money to do it.
Thank you, sir. Come on up, please.
I obviously opposed. You've heard from me before. I'm sorry, I'm from Newton. Andrea Tuckins, 175 Newtonville Avenue in Newton, 9 houses away from the proposed facility. You know, I opposed the issuance of a special permit. I asked you to vote no, you know, when it comes to time for a vote. You know, in reading through some of the documents here for the special permit, you know, I looked at some of the things other people said and mentioned, and there was a lot of talk about how, you know, how someone's home is the fruition of their aspirations, of their hard work. You know, for me, my home, my family has two at the top of Newtonville Avenue, it is the fruition of three generations of my family who have been there. My family moved here, they came here in 1933, the Newton Corner Market, and the Newton Corner, which was taken 23 years later by eminent domain to go to Trent Heights, and stood there until that time. My father and my uncle continued to contribute to the business community in Newton. My father and my uncle opened Cabot's Ice Cream in the 1960s. I wasn't around yet, I don't know the exact year, it was around 1964. And ran it for several years until they sold the business. So we have a vested interest in this area. And in keeping it friendly for the community. My son's going to elementary school and middle school and go to school here, and I hope that they will continue to contribute and just come to this community. And I look to you as our elected officials to represent them and us and to protect them and others who have lived here for so many years, like my family, in this neighborhood from the negative impacts to their safety. I'm pleased to hear that there's some discussion about additional traffic studies. I would really encourage a formal traffic study of this area. I'm not going to repeat everything everyone has said. I think that it has to be an independent and complete traffic study looking at all the routes to this area, as well as looking at the proposed, at the current usage. If you drive down there on the weekends, there is virtually no traffic in that area. I also want to address something that was raised in terms of limiting parking on the street, limiting the types of trucks, truck parking on the street, for instance. If this facility were built, prohibiting live parking or vehicles forming in a queue along the lab, I would suggest that would only increase the traffic problem in the area, because cars wouldn't be able to wait in the line, wouldn't be able to park, they would be driving around our streets and creating a greater problem in that area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Come on up, please.
Hi, my name is Peter Bruce. I live on Claflin Place. I often drive on Newtonville Avenue because I'm a taxi driver. It's a good route. I like it clear. I don't like accidents on it. And it's especially hazardous when it snows or when you face big vehicles. I wonder if the planning department gentleman up here knows, could tell us how wide Newtonville Avenue is at some of its narrower points, or does anybody else have that data? How many feet wide is the street in those places?
We're not going to engage in a back and forth. The question will be noted.
Okay, thank you. I think Jeffrey Kane had a great idea of sequestering this area, maybe having something like a little frontage road off the pike that could take a lot of the stress off of Newtonville Avenue. Like I said, Newtonville Avenue is difficult enough to drive as is. It's rather dangerous. It's very narrow, curvy, hilly, etc. And we don't have that many trucks, vans, or inexperienced drivers on it now. We would if the facility was built, especially at the size and scale that they're talking about. Finally, as far as the community goes, I think it's only fair to them to have reasonable hours so that they can sleep and go to bed at fairly normal times and not be disturbed by it. If that means changing the traffic flow so that we have a lot more traffic in prime time and less in less busy times, I'd say so be it. But if that can't be done well, I don't think this project should be done at all, and that the special permit should be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else on this side?
come on up, please. Good evening.
Hi, Lynn LeBlanc, 43 Brookdale Road. Thank you. I appreciate all the time and effort that you've put into this, and I appreciate the suggestion for a flow study. I think that's an excellent idea. But I urge the city councilors to vote against this special permit for the Newtonville Avenue storage facility. I think it's the difference between what is allowable by right and what the developer would like to do to maximize his profit. And I think profit of the developer should not be a consideration at all. I think neighborhood consideration should be paramount. The neighbors and residents are right to be concerned about traffic, parking, safety, especially because of their proximity to Cabot School. Residents and neighbors have put a tremendous amount of time and energy into making sure that you, the city councilors, listen to them. And so I ask you, please, do not allow the special permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Come on up. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Rebecca Tatsunis, and I live at 174 Newtonville Avenue. Traffic on Newtonville Avenue and in the area of the potential storage facility is a serious safety issue. It is my understanding that the ITE Trip Generation Manual is the commonly used reference that uses data drawn from similar projects across the U.S. and Canada and provides guidance as to the expected levels of traffic that a facility of this size would generate. The manual estimates that on weekdays, approximately 142 vehicles per day would use the facility. On Saturdays, 130. On Sundays, 100. On Sundays, 95. On Thursday, May 19th, from 7:45 a.m. to 10 a.m., I photographed vehicles coming and going from the Norcross lot. There were a total of 11. On Friday, May 20th, from the hours of 11:45 to 3 p.m., there were a total of 13 vehicles coming and going. On Saturday, May 21st, from 9:45 to 11 a.m., I observed no vehicles going or coming from the Norcross lot. But I did have the time to count the cars at the intersection of the three streets. Going up Newtonville Avenue and only going up and down Newtonville Avenue, there were 119 vehicles in 45 minutes. Coming off of Washington Street onto Lewis Terrace and only coming off of Washington Street onto Lewis Terrace, there were 107 vehicles. Coming off of Eastside Parkway, there are 54 vehicles. I noted the types of vehicles, the colors. Most had only one or two people. Most did not observe the stop signs. There were a mixture of pedestrians and bicyclists, living with all the traffic, some mothers with kids in strollers, one family walking to the park. I would like to point out there were no vehicles coming out of the Norcross lot at all. According to the ITE Trip Generator, there should be 130 vehicles a day coming out. We will be adding 130 vehicles on Saturdays and 95 on Sundays in that area. On April 6th, which was the day after the first Lansing meeting on this subject, I went to the Bridge Street storage facility and I spoke with the assistant manager. He gave me his business card. He said there are a fair amount of marketing and commercial people who use that facility and store their items there until they go to the distributor. The facility is popular because of its close proximity to the Mass Pike. He also said that on Saturdays, trucks line up early outside to access the facility. So on Saturday, May 21st, one of our neighbors went to the Bridge Street facility at 6:45 a.m. and found 9 trucks, 20 feet in size, 1 van, 3 cars, and in the next hour, 2 more trucks, 6 cars, and another van arrived. The Bridge Street facility has 2 parking lots with a total of 36 spaces and is 94,000 square feet. At the land use walkthrough on April 28th, David Levenfeld was talking to a group of people. I was in that group of people, and he mentioned the Nesco property was up for sale. He also mentioned that somebody who buys that property will probably be looking for a special permit. The listing for that property says it is a stone's throw from the Mass Pike. If you grant a special permit for this oversized storage facility, you are setting a precedent for the Nesco building. My Thursday and Friday traffic observations also allowed me to see the tremendous amount of traffic coming out of the Nesco area and Cabot Park Village. If you allow a 1,025-unit storage facility with only 11 parking spaces, we will have overflow onto Newtonville Avenue and surrounding streets. If you restrict parking in front of the facility, the overflow will be onto the streets.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up your comments,
okay,
please.
I have to deny the special for the storage facility. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please, come on up. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Kate Mackey. I'm at 26 President Street. Yeah, just to respect the time, I just wanted to address a couple of quick things, just to make sure they're all said. First thing, I know that there was a concern about strangers being brought in. There was a comment made at one of the neighborhood meetings that was a factual comment that says, I believe it's within 3 miles is the majority of the people that rent these facilities. I may be misspeaking, it may be 5 miles, but we could certainly check because they're right here. The second one is, we have had two of the direct abutters directly across the street and directly to our left come forth at almost every single neighborhood meeting, another meeting, and the last two meetings we have had here and say, this is what we should be doing. We would. So I just want to make sure that's been heard by everyone. Also, there is an online poll, which I'm sure all of you are aware of. The reason I bring it up is my concern is that it has been a breeding ground of a lot of venting. Venting is good, but my concern is that I have come across a lot of people who have signed this, and then when I have presented facts, you can't even argue facts with them. They said, oh, we didn't know that, or oh, we were told this. So going on there and being able to look, there is misrepresentative information that concerns me with something that is so important. Also, the buyers, the attorney, the architect, and the owner have all made themselves regularly available. Every neighborhood meeting, our attendance continually floats down, down, down. We try to do it so we want to be a part, we want to help. So it's a little bit challenging when it feels like there's a comment that's being made online, and then we're here and we're not being accessed to say, let's talk this out. That was our whole intention, is to make sure we are thinking about this neighborhood and just want to make sure that's being said. A couple of, just to address the prior and also other comments about traffic, we are not at Northwest currently fully leased. So it is not a full representation right now of traffic. It is not possible. If for some reason this didn't happen, it will be fully leased. I can tell you from personal experience being there for 10 years, we would have enormous trucks come in. In fact, if you go and you look directly at the driveway, the left of 255, the driveway is permanently damaged from the axles of these enormous trucks that would come in and out every day, multiple times a day, because of our manufacturing. So just wanted to have that stated. Also, the comment about the building and how enormous it is, yes, it is a large building. That is a fact. No one can argue that, but I feel like it is a misrepresentation because it is so much under the ground. It's not sitting on the top of the ground and going up to this enormous pyramid. So, again, I just think it's really important to go back center on the facts so that we can have a real productive conversation and also to alleviate unnecessary angst or frustration or concerns, but also to address the real ones that we really do care about addressing that are important.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, please come on up. Good evening.
Hi, I'll be brief. My name is Pat Abbott. I live at 314 Newtonville Ave. I've lived on Newtonville Ave near the Northcross site for over 10 years. I, along with over 770 non-anonymous Newton voters, asked tonight that you deny the special permit to the proposed supersized storage facility. There are many problems with the proposed project, which would bring with it the inevitable crime, noise, and trash characteristic of such facilities to our densely populated residential neighborhoods. Most detrimentally, this project would bring the unacceptable addition of large vehicle traffic to the already overwhelmed and unsafe intersection at Newtonville Ave, Eastside Parkway, and Lewis Terrace, and to the narrow artery that is Newtonville Avenue. According to data collected by our group last week at the North Club site, 238 vehicles passed through this intersection within a 45-minute time frame at a rate of 317 vehicles per hour. During that same 45-minute time frame, there were no vehicles entering or leaving the North Club site. Across town, at the Bridge Street Storage Facility, 10 trucks, 2 vans, and 4 cars, a total of 16 vehicles, entered the grounds in less than 1 hour. Any unbiased, independent traffic study would verify this data. Therefore, this proposed two times larger facility would likely bring 32 vehicles, including 20 large trucks, each hour into an intersection already congested by 317 vehicles passing through in the same time period. I can tell you from 10 years of experience, this is typical traffic flow in that intersection. This proposed project is only low impact for those who do not live in the neighborhood and do not travel its streets. For the rest of us, this project would be a blight on the area for years to come. The proposed project, as I think we all know, does not satisfy the special permit criteria and should not by law be approved. This project would enormously benefit a very few to the great detriment of many for decades. We rely on you, our city councilors, to protect our neighborhoods from avaricious overdevelopment and all the resultant damage it incurs. This project will continue to close the Newtonville Ave neighborhood long after the owner and developer have pocketed their millions and driven away with us in their rearview mirrors. There are many preferable options for the use of this land that would benefit both the owner and the surrounding community, as well as sufficiently pad the city coffers. Please protect us from the pillage of our neighborhood by the construction of an obscenely supersized storage facility. Please vote no to this special permit. Thank you for your support and your consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Robin Lapidus. I live at 12 Princeton Street, and I've spoken here before, so this is new material based on new research. I want to say that when I attended the community meeting, I gave some of my personal experiences of having a storage unit in Central Square, Cambridge. My unit came with a mouse trap, and I said, the guy said, do you want it? And I said, well, is it here for a reason? And the answer was yes. So when I brought up some of my fears, which are that in Central Square there are homeless people who live in the facilities, and there's rat traps, and there's all kinds of stuff, food and just ick, I was told that this is a really responsible group that will manage this facility. And that, you know, we heard anecdotal stories about baseball bags being allowed to be stored in the basement, and that's why there's some kind of magical, you know, bespurt about why this should be happening at this location. And at the same time, Mr. Levenfeld was selling $242 million transaction of storage facilities. So, you know, it's nice to think about the baseball bags and all the other things we could like to store at this site, but the reality is storage facilities, you know, these might be the Jiffy Lube of the past, or the strip mall, or whatever. But it's a $30 billion business anticipated in 2018. The number of storage facilities in 2015 is anticipated to be 52,952 units. And when he was interviewed, he said, as a mid-sized owner that isn't going to own our assets indefinitely, in contrast to the REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, that may hold their good properties through many cycles, we weren't going to hold the properties forever, so it seemed like a good time to sell, Levenfeld said. He also said, we have five development deals under contract in permitting in the Northeast, and I assume this is one of the five. So, you know, the scale that we're talking about isn't Norcross to Norcross. It's Norcross to a multi-billion dollar industry. Favor, you know, the things that scare me, I found on a website called bluesheepdog.com, which is where they talk about training police dogs and going into facilities. And they basically say that through the years, police officers have found all kinds of criminal activity lurking inside the unassuming storage facility. Police training classes, they've been talking about having canines go through facilities, which, by the way, as a neighbor, I think might not be a bad idea. But it says the threat of meth labs. The DEA has a study on meth labs in storage facilities.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up if you would, please.
I will. You know, I know that sounds like fear-mongering, but it's scary to think of what could go on inside this building, and I really ask you to please deny this special permit. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, I think I've covered this side of the room. Have I not? Come on up, Ms. Hanrider. Good evening.
Good evening. Bernie Hinterreg at 20 Lewis Terrace. I'm across the street from the proposed building. I've had a lot of dialogue and give and take with the developer and the attorney. Specifically, my concerns were the roof, which is 38,000 square feet and quite a sight, that from my second story window. We discussed it for quite some time, and I was very pleased that they came up with a plan to install some 15-foot hemlocks. We went around on the trees. I was worried about the sun because of the remaining canopy and whether they could thrive, and the hemlocks were more expensive, but they decided, you know, these hemlocks will thrive. And then I was concerned. I said, okay, I know what my water bill's like, and these guys aren't going to have enough water to plant, you know, to water all these plantings. And that's when I said, you know, why don't you put in a 20,000-gallon cistern? We get 4 inches of rain a month, and that's 25,000 gallons a month. And, you know, when you put water and stuff, it grows. And so I think personally that the solution to this building is large trees, and large trees will come from being watered. And I think for me that them getting a water collection system in there to really douse all this landscaping will actually give us a buffer. It might take some time, maybe even more trees, maybe they could even be bigger to start, I don't know. But I personally feel that this building could be made green. It could be screened, but you can't cheap out on the landscaping, and you can't cheap out on the irrigation. And I think that for me is the path. People talk about the green roof thing, and you know, and at first I thought, oh, that's a great idea. But the thing is that all of these plantings, they're going to need water, and so as it is, I did a calculation on how much water that all of these things are going to need, and they're going to need 20,000, just what's on the ground is going to need 20,000 gallons of water every month, which they can get from the rain for the most part. But throw on a green roof, a quote planted green roof that takes all that water, now you're going to have to supplement it even more. So I think it's possible really to, you know, for me the traffic thing, I don't know, that's up to all of the you guys to figure out. I can't figure that out. But I think that it could be made so that its impact from a visual perspective would be minimal. And frankly, as a homeowner, I think that's the main concern. My understanding is that a hemlock, you know, might grow about a foot a year, maybe slightly more. And so if we look down 5 years, 10 years, you know, we might start getting some screening. Because there is the concern when all these leaves drop from the remaining deciduous canopy, what you got left is going to be, well.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
That's it. I think the trees and irrigating is the way to go on that.
Thank you very much. Come on up, sir.
Honorable Chairman and members of the Council, my name is Kenneth Roberts, 252 Cabot Street, and a business owner at 249 Walnut Street. A little bit selfishly, as a business owner whose business is going to be a rags next year with the oil project, I wouldn't mind to have a little bit of storage that's somewhat near. But as a 37-year resident of Newton and someone who hopes to have my children grow up in Newton, I just want to say to everybody on the Council and all of my fellow citizens of Newton, please be aware of unintended consequences. This is a relatively low-impact facility. If this permit is denied and there are other properties that are going up for sale in the near area, we potentially are going to see something in 10 years that, if you think this is big, would be monstrous and something else. Okay? Please be aware of unintended consequences. As someone, like I said, who wants to have my children go to Cabot School and go in the park and use all the facilities, please be aware of unintended consequences. we need, if we, this area is currently zoned as a manufacturing zone. This is a very low impact use of that manufacturing zone. I myself have used storage facilities. Traffic is relatively low. So please, be aware of unintended consequences. Please don't let our neighborhood become something ridiculous and crazy because there's other properties that are potentially in play in the not-too-distant future. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I'm going to start off over here. This woman's been very patient. We're going to then move back. I'm going to start here first. I'll go to you after that.
Good evening. My name is Fitz Height, and I live at 31 Lewis Street. With all due respect to the great amount of thought that's gone into modifying the plan, I would like to ask why a self-storage unit in this location on Newtonville Avenue is necessary at all. There is already a self-storage facility within half a mile on Bridge Street. I use the Bridge Street storage facility myself. I'm not a business, by the way. We just don't have many closets. Since there is always room there, and I have changed storage units there several times. Traffic is one issue. It is on a corner near an elementary school with small children walking to school. Cabot School is just diagonally across the park, not to mention people walking their dogs to the dog park just opposite the proposed building. But for me, the primary issue here is one of aesthetics and what is the most appropriate use for the property. Commercial buildings are currently only on one side of the street in two short blocks between Lewis Terrace and Farquhar. The whole rest of Newtonville Avenue until you go west almost all the way to Walnut Street is residential. It is opposite a beautiful park. Streets around it are all residential. I really wish we had a map and photographs to look at here so people could see that. Therefore, I'm for rezoning. I believe we should petition the appropriate committee to change the zoning to residential. Newton is desperate for more reasonably priced housing, a more attractive, more appropriate use for this residential neighborhood, and a more needed use would be a small cluster of low-middle-income housing units. I urge you to vote no on this petition so that we can move it over to the zoning committee. How do we do that? How do we find out how to submit a petition for rezoning? Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Sir, I'll take you and then I'll move right back up here. Good evening.
Thank you. My name is Edward Nance. I live on 7 Monroe Street. I own a property that is abutting to this new proposed development site. And my name is on the list of abutters, which I found out luckily by chance due to some, you know, flyers that I saw, right? City didn't contact me, developers didn't contact me. We have a three-unit condominium. None of our owners received any notice of anything that is ongoing, right? I want to say that first. Second, I lived there for 12 years. Northwest building. In 12 years, I've seen zero cars coming or going into this building. So I thought it was abandoned, frankly, right? So the idea that, you know, this new facility will decrease the traffic is absolute nonsense, right? And second, I want to use this opportunity. You know, everybody says it's a manufacturing district. There is Northwest Building, which is kind of abandoned, and there is Nestle. That's about it, and Puch Hotel behind it. So it's hard to call it a district, right? Nestle conducts nightly operations, 1, 2, 3 a.m. Trucks are coming in, big trucks. 2 years ago, I contacted City Hall. I talked to William Forte, right? His response was, he was a nice guy. I'm not sure if he's still on the board. His response was, this is manufacturing zoning. 24-hour operation is allowed. Go talk to the unit, to the owners of the business. Owners said, we'll try to accommodate to be quiet. But frankly, they still operate. They're quiet daytime, but 1 to 3 a.m. trucks, rigs are coming in, which is the most ridiculous thing. 50 feet from residential housing. The level of noise is about, you know, mid-level construction costs. So I hope when you consider these two lots, transition them to be residential, because, you know, you cannot conduct nightly, you know, loading facility out of this property. right? Once again, I had emails, exchanges, phone calls with William Forte. He was concerned, but he said 24 hours. Manufacturing zone. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, on this side of the room, come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening, I'm Lee Warren, and I live at 53 Newtonville Avenue. I've lived there for 42 years. It's been my home, my child's home, my grandchildren's home. I have several concerns, some of which have been spoken about. One is about the hours. When trucks drive down that street early in the morning, they drive through my bedroom. So the idea of having trucks coming at 6 in the morning is just appalling. The lawyer says, let's just give it a try for a year. And I'm thinking, so who has to live with it for that year? The other thing is, we've talked about there'd be less traffic, but the kind of traffic would be different. It would be big trucks rather than cars. A few more cars aren't going to make a huge difference, but huge trucks will on a very narrow road that is not ready for big trucks. I would urge, if this ever goes through, that there be no on-street parking for trucks, that all the parking have to be within off the street. But mostly, I have not heard a single good argument for making a special permit, for changing the rules for this, other than that some person who has a development idea for himself wants to do it. But in terms of the public, haven't heard any arguments for this being a good idea. So I urge you to protect the citizen and deny the special permit.
Thank you, ma'am. Others on this side of the room? All right, I'm just going to move back as we go, please. And then when we're done, colleagues, we're going to talk about what our next steps are going to be. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. My name is Elaine Norcross, 25 Fisher Ave. Thank you for hearing us. A few things have already been said. Won't go over it. I do want to comment that this is a manufacturing zone. The homeowners must have known that when they purchased the property, their property. That can't be changed. I hear people with concerns about speeding cars and others breaking the law by not stopping at a stop sign. This is not the problem of the landowner. I also want to comment that for 70 years, while Norcross, the company was there, 1 to 3 18-wheelers were coming in daily. We're talking now about vans and U-Hauls, which are not big trucks. So, at that point. Generating tax dollars for the city, this is a business. This project has been modified. I think it's time to approve it. And lastly, in order to get the false information posted online, you have to agree and say that you disagree with this project. And that is manipulative. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please, anyone else on this side? Right there, let me just kind of keep going back. Come on up, please, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Rita Cronus. I live at 24 Lewis Street, 2 houses away from the intended building. I have some concerns. I have lived in Newton for 29 and a half years, in the current place, 21 and a half years, and I believe wholeheartedly that this is a little too large. And it really struck me when Harry said, look at this building, look how big it is, and what it would be. And that's when it hit me, like, this is really enormous. I don't see the reason for something that enormous. I asked Mr. Langenfeld, myself today, what's the difference between what was originally proposed in height and what is proposed now, 3 feet? Well, almost 3 feet. Well, isn't there, I didn't know if there was anything in the bylaws that said how many stories something a business could be in that area. Is 3 stories allowed? Or 2 stories? Well, it doesn't matter, most of it will be underground. Well, from what you're going to be looking at, you're only going to be seeing 16, 20 feet. Well, I look at that corner, it's 3 windows in my front living room. I sat on my front porch Saturday for 10 minutes having a cup of coffee. 27 cars going through the stop sign or the other stop sign going from Newton Street, Lewis Street or Lewis Terrace or going up. Newtonville or going down Newtonville. That's in 10 minutes. You can't tell me on a Saturday morning it's not going to be different, it's not going to be less. You can't tell me that. I'm not a fool. I understand the Norcross family has the right to sell, but right now I think there's a much better plan. Somebody said put in housing. Well, that's awesome. Somebody said let the city buy it. Well, they should, and then put in housing. You know, right now, I think this is a very poor, enormous, oversized, unneeded, except for monetarily valued to some few people. And like somebody said, where's the reasoning? We haven't heard the positive reasoning for something this enormous. There's no reason for it. And I can't imagine anybody in my neighborhood going, oh, let's run to the corner and put our stuff in that corner, because they said last month as I stood here, oh, it's going to be your neighbors using it. Oh, and then, Mrs. Norcross said, oh, I've had some, oh, wait a minute, I wrote it down, vandalism. And when I asked about it, I was told, oh, no, 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 we're going to have cameras. So tell me, a camera's going to stop vandalism.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, ma'am.
Well, I just really believe there is a lot of vandalism when it comes to storage units. I asked 5 different state troopers. I asked a few other police officers. And I asked for reports. So in my personal opinion, for 29 and a half years in this city, please say no. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Ruth Chapman. My husband and I live at 158 Beachside Parkway and have lived there for 43 years. I'm going to make this very simple and very brief. My husband and I support this. We have studied all of the proposals. We live on very busy Beachside Parkway. You can do your study whenever you want, but meanwhile, this is a property and this is a proposal that needs to be supported. I will take the opportunity to write to all of you rather than take the time tonight to express my views. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please come on up. And is there anybody else that after that, just line a couple of you line up and you can keep going. Good evening.
Hi there. I know it's getting late. Really quick, my name is Karen Price. I am at 1997 Beacon Street. And what I want to answer is the question around why this is the best option. So we've heard over and over again that this is the lowest impact option. I know that when the traffic study comes back, if that's what we do, we're going to find that it is a lower impact. And I just want to reiterate, it is a lower impact. This is a manufacturing zone. That's what it is. And I hear folks wanting it differently. This is a manufacturing zone. And so when you look at all of the options for what could be in a manufacturing zone next to an abutting neighbor, this is the lowest impact. That's why this is a good option. And that's why I'm in support of this.
Thank you very much. Next, please, Ms. Bliss, do you want to?
Hi, my name is Claire Robertson. I live at 158 Newtonville Ave. I've asked the committee to deny this special permit request based on the size, scale of this project, and also the limited parking. I appreciate the council members asking for further study on the possible traffic and parking implications. And I'd also just like to raise a question about the possibility of public auctions at the storage facility and what that might mean for visit count to the site and possibility of parking overflow. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tamara Bliss. I live at 9 Lewis Street, one house from Newtonville Avenue opposite the facility. I've lived there for 48 years. I'd like to pick up on, be careful what you wish for. Land is difficult to develop, and a storage facility can be built into the land. I've heard lots of criticism, almost no suggestions. Last time we heard a medical facility would generate far more traffic. I hear housing. Well, if you rezone it, which I don't think you can do against the owner's will, that land is expensive. It's not going to be 16 townhouses or 4 2 families. It might be leveled. Every tree could come down, and we might have 100 units, maybe more. It could be a 40B project. And maybe someone will now buy the budding project and will have something even bigger. It is very easy to be against things. It is very easy to send flyers out with misinformation and to get people to sign up when they don't know that it's a ready-zoned manufacturing. This is private property. I don't see too many people wanting to pay taxes to buy this land. It isn't a nature conservation land. I think the fact that it is underground is helpful. I have talked with some of the councilors who definitely need to improve the traffic in that general area. It requires a very major study, which I hope the council will consider, that's beyond just this parcel, because it is a dangerous intersection. But just going and saying no is not helpful when there are virtually no real alternative solutions. I'd like to hear that from all the opposition.
Thank you. Sir, come on up, please. Did you want to speak as well, sir? Okay. Good evening.
All right. Good evening. My name is Joe Price. I'm from 1997 Beacon Street over in Wobbin. Let me just start by saying, Chairman and members of the committee, I have newfound respect for you. I simply could not sit in your position and do the job that you do day in, day out with this type of caseload. Gentleman over here said something about how tall that ceiling is. I know definitively I would be hanging from it at this point if I were in your shoes. So thank you for the work that you do. I just wanted to start with a little bit of a research for you in terms of what you talked about before. I spoke before about the traffic ramifications, some of the work I've done as a project manager and this type of thing. I went back to do a little bit more research into the type of business model that storage facility runs and the types of systems that come out of it and the challenges concerned. So I looked up a group called the Parham Group, P-A-R-H-A-M Group. They have overseen the building of over 900 million square feet of square footage. They've conducted over 225 million in complete projects, and that's over 300 projects across the United States, including right here in Massachusetts. If you want to look up their website, anyone in general, the website is lawrenceupstorage.com. They're basically a consulting group that works with developers to help identify ideal locations for self-storage facilities. So that means obtaining the required market data, identifying existing marketing competition, determining square footage, competitors, so on and so forth. And I wanted to cite their feasibility study and site selection study they put on July 6, 2014. Talks in depth about their customer segmentation and all of the customers that they surveyed across the U.S. Some key statistics to know that while 95% of actual move-ins are performed by men, 84% of the self-storage patrons are actually women. 88% are between the ages of 21 and 55 years of age. 78% have incomes of between lower middle and upper middle income. 75% of the tenants live or work within 2 miles of the storage facility, so ironically, a lot of the folks here in opposition tonight would actually be the patrons of said storage facility. The reason residential customers use self-storage, 54% are usually moving, 32% are actually cleaning out a garage or a basement for more living space. In terms of the average lease time for a residential consumer, it's between 6 and 8 months. In terms of commercial tenants, speaking to the community member earlier, they represent between 15 and 20% of all the property's customers. And again, these are averages across the nation, including here in Massachusetts. The reasons commercial customers use self-storage, well, 32% are small contractors storing equipment and materials, 29% are retailers storing excess inventory, and 24% are professionals, such as CPAs, doctors, and so on and so forth, who are storing records, diplomas, or degrees.
To wrap up your...
Sure. Commercial tenants actually have a lease time of about 18 to 24 months on average, and again, they usually go between 1 and 2 times during that period. I would just like to also put out to the members of the community here that you might want to look at the zoning ordinance, chapter 30, section 4.4. That deals with the right to use in terms of the actual property as it's zoned. A couple of facts that you need to know.
I'm going to...
Zoning is not going to change. That has to sell the property. And if you do look at that list of alternatives to what we're talking about here, you're going to find that there's nothing that comes close to what you're proposing in terms of residences, so on and so forth. The property has to be sold. It's not going to be done anything other than industrial manufacturing. Look at the law and realize what you could do to yourself if you deny this proposal.
I'm going to ask you that. Okay, thank you very much, sir. Next, please.
Dan Mackin, 26 Parson Street over in West Newton. I made a comment before about wanting to be a client, if you will, and that's a guarantee. And I've spoken with a lot of my colleagues at my workplace where they all are finding that in a lot of their neighborhoods they're losing space and they're having to look to self-storage units to make it a livable condition for them. Not all of them have had their houses for as long as some of those folks have, but they want to be added to the community as well. So I think that's important to note. I think the other thing I'm hearing a lot of too is about the traffic, is how crazy the traffic is. And I drive Newtonville Ave almost daily, and I will say that I've noticed some similar patterns. And when I haven't lived in this neighborhood, and I've lived in neighborhoods in the past in my youth, my family was part of a bit of a neighborhood watch that was keeping an eye on all of these traffic patterns and reporting that to the police on a regular basis. And they were doing their own policing of some of the traffic patterns. And I'm not here to criticize that at all, but that shouldn't be a reason why you deny a permit. That should be something that the effort of observing the traffic for the purposes of wanting to deny a permit, that effort could be put towards noticing some of the license plates that are blowing past the stop signs and that are doing some of these things that are making it a lot more dangerous. So just a few things that I wanted to mention on that, and I'll keep brief.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else who wishes to speak this evening? Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Sue Bertino. I live at 67 Lewis Street. I've written to the council members on this committee. I have one or two points I'd like to reiterate and expand on further. My concern is truck traffic on the site, which will spill out onto Newtonville Avenue. I've asked a question before how it would be addressed if more than one moving truck was in the driveway of the facility at a time, and I was told by the developer that would never happen. We have studies here that show at other storage facilities there have been multiple trucks at any given time, of course, and of course it can't be prevented. So I don't feel like that's an issue that's been addressed. Some back of the envelope calculations show that the proposed driveway from Newtonville Avenue to the loading dock is 40 to 50 feet long. I can go on the internet right now and rent a 26-foot moving truck from U-Haul with my own regular driver's license and pack up my house or as much of it as I could get in there, get over there, get in the driveway, and then somebody else just like me could come. And there's no way that the two of us could negotiate in and out of the facility. I don't know how big each individual storage facility unit is proposed to be, but it takes hours to unpack a two-bedroom condo. It takes hours to move things up to an elevator, even with dollies. So these are hours that a loading dock would be taken up by one truck. Where's the other truck going to go? And what if you, I don't know, maybe have three trucks at a time? It is possible. There's no plan for circulation on the site. The plan is the city residents and the city streets will absorb that overflow, and we can't. You've heard about crashes. You've heard about the poor traffic circulation in that area. We can't have one truck backing out onto Newtonville Avenue. So I'm concerned that we haven't had an independent traffic study done, and I'm concerned that we're looking at aggregate data, not piece data, as somebody else mentioned, and not truck traffic in particular, which is different than car traffic, and needs to be able to get in and out with good ingress and egress. Because if I could rent a 26-foot box truck, you don't want me driving it down the driveway and trying to back it out while another big truck is coming in. It's cheap and it's dangerous. The other thing that I wanted to say was, there's been a report, there's been some information online about soil contamination at this site. I'd like to get more information about that and what will happen when there is development there
currently there's a nursery school in the Northcross building. I'm concerned about what effects that could have on our neighborhood when there's development there. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else? Come on up, sir. There's one other person behind you. Is there anybody else who wish to speak this evening after that? All right. Seeing on you, the last two. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. My name is James Pacifico, 48th Circuit Ave, Newton Highlands. Thank you for listening to me, and I really appreciate my fellow residents to voice their concerns. I have the same concerns, and I tend to agree with most of what they've been saying. My key concern is the email I received, where I was told by the company, do the least harm. That's what this is going to do, the least harm. So, special permit, I'm expecting a plus, not a negative. What are you thinking? For least harm. So, in that concern, I see an issue here. I see a lot of issues regarding safety, in particular, fire. I don't think the fire department could handle this, the special permit access requirement. I don't think the police department can handle this special access requirement. I just see some reports from the police department and the fire department heads saying they agree that this is an okay thing for a special permit to be done. Do you have any sign with it? Have you had any dialogues with these police departments? I want to see that. I want to hear that. So these are my two concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening, Barbara Herman, 17 Winchester Road. My issue is the enormous variance requested for the size of the building. When I bought my home on Winchester Road, I didn't think I'd be living next to a monstrosity. So my suggestion is put in a 20,000 square foot storage unit. See how it goes. You'll have a lot less traffic. Come back in 3 or 5 years and ask to put on, get a variance to put on an addition. Don't put on 100 plus thousand square foot unit and then see how it goes while the neighborhood's left with the monstrosity. Just go the other way. So thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. All right. I'd like to take a minute. It's 10 o'clock. We still have another matter to take up this evening. We're not obviously going to vote on this tonight. But I want over the next few minutes to establish some protocol and procedure for what we're going to do going forward. My intent is to take this up at our last meeting in June, which is the 28th, June 28th. I want my intent is to close the public hearing and take this up for a vote on June 28th. I do not want this going one way or the other. I do not want this going into the summer. So let's take a minute, if we could, colleagues, to talk about exactly... When's our deadline? Well, you, Attorney Schlesinger, I'm noting that we're seeing some deadlines approaching. I take it you'll have no problem with an extension?
I will request this promptly.
Thank you. Solves that problem, doesn't it? Thank you for alerting me to that. So I think it's very important for us as a committee to focus on what exactly we want next so that we position this to get ready for a vote. Let me offer a couple observations, if that's okay, and then we can talk. For one, I've heard considerable comment this evening from the public about why can't we just change the zoning on this project? And I think there are ready answers to that, and what I've asked is for our legal department to prepare a short memorandum. Doesn't have to be lengthy. Pardon? Councilor Schwartz?
I was a little concerned during some of the public comment that, you know, it's been commented that there have been either misrepresentations or claims that are not accurate. And while that may or may not be true, I think if we know of anything right now that's just not legally so, I think we should say it, because there are a lot of people here who should know what the truth is. So I had actually already asked Attorney Waddick if it's at all possible for him to answer that question, because I want to know the answer.
If you can,
my understanding is that we can't change the zoning.
This committee cannot change the zoning. That's quite clear. The way zoning is changed is through a petition to change the zone, and that involves certain criteria that need to be met and standards that need to be met, and you cannot do what's called spot zoning. You can't do what's called taking. You cannot take somebody's land via zoning. What I think, Councillor Schwartz, that Mr. Water could probably best address that in a short memo.
Okay. I just think that when the public's been...
I think the expectation will be that you cannot just change the zoning.
I just would like us to all be working with the same set of facts. So if there are some very clear facts right now, I'd love to have them out there so that people who came tonight can go home with the right facts.
Mr. Wallace, are you prepared to comment on that?
I thought you summarized it, Mr. Chairman. It's a separate proceeding. There are procedural requirements that need to be followed. That petition is not before the City Council at this time. We're talking about rezoning a particular parcel of property, privately owned property. Typically when that happens, the landowner is a petitioner. The landowner is the party that's requesting the zone change. When that is not the case, you run the risk of what you have talked about, which is a taking. If you're rezoning a piece of privately owned property and decreasing the value of that property as a result of the rezoning, that's tantamount to a taking. So that's an issue. There are other issues, as you pointed out. It's a completely... I'm happy to summarize all of this.
If you can give us a page. I think what Councillor Schwartz, requested, and Attorney Waddick just indicated is quite clear. You can't just say we want to rezone this. It doesn't work that way. This is a manufacturing zone, and unless the petitioner seeks to request to rezone, there's a very specific process involved, and it's not one that we can just undertake at our will, even if a petition is presented to us. And I'd like Mr. Waddick to explain a little more detail, because I think as Councillor Schwartz said, we don't want to operate under any misconceptions here. Likewise, I heard from a number of folks about maybe you could put in an access road somehow off Lewis Terrace. I think our planning department probably could, maybe right now or if not, again in a very short memo, explain the inherent difficulties involved with that kind of process. Again, I think we all, as Councillor Schwartz said, ought to be operating off the same facts. But aside from those two issues, I think there are a few things that we've talked about that we do have some requests for more information, and I'd like to get the committee's thoughts on how we get that information. So the first is, Councillor Lennon, I think you initially talked about traffic studies. What is it that you're envisioning that would be helpful not only to you but to the public here?
I think what would be helpful is we've been given a number of set of criteria. We've had the petitioner put forward some numbers. I've heard the ITE manual. I've heard the self-storage industry has numbers. I would just like someone to... We've had folks out counting cars on their own. We've had the petitioner offer to go out at 6 o'clock in the morning to facilities in Newton. I think we need someone independently to kind of judge all these sources that we're getting and give this committee some guidance on that. Again, I happen to believe the numbers that we're getting in terms of low impact. However, what I'm hearing from folks in the public is they'd like some assurance that some set of numbers is accurate. And I think we owe them that. My suggestion was, in mentioning this to the petitioner, that they weren't really receptive to having a full traffic study done. I think their position is that it's low traffic impact and they've submitted numbers as such. What I was suggesting was, even if we didn't get to the point of a full-blown traffic study, that there was some peer review that could be done for a minimal amount of money that could be simply a desk review that would be independent that would provide us a little bit of guidance. I'm sensitive to the time. I am not looking for something that needs to be put out to bid and then potentially drags this out. I think by giving us a month, it allows us some flexibility, having some understanding of how purchasing works. I mean, depending on price, it could be simple as phone solicitation and phone quotes that could be arrived at with potential vendors. And I just think it's something that would give this committee a little guidance and give the public a little bit of assurance about what we're looking at. The other thing I just wanted to mention, I don't know if you wanted to bring it up, was one thing I did hear a little bit about tonight was crime and crime statistics. And seeing that we have other facilities in Newton and we have other facilities that are in the surrounding area, I had mentioned to Alexandra about, I mean, are there police reports that have been done? Just, again, as a guide to the committee to say, you know, there have been two reports in 5 years. I don't consider that a huge crime issue. So I think that it's something that is warranted. If we're going to start putting things on the table, and I agree with you in trying to move this to a vote, in fairness to the petitioner, but also in fairness to the public, so that they understand what's going on. So I think if myself and others have things they want to put on the table, we should put them on the table now and be ready for the 28th.
My only addition to the, I think your idea of a traffic study, Mr. President, meets my thoughts as well. The only other thing I'd like to know is some kind of peer review about, you know, we've heard the allegation that at other places the trucks are lining up early in the morning. I have no idea if that's, and I'm not, again, guiding the veracity of anyone who's made that observation or otherwise, but I think it's worthwhile for some, whether it's our staff or some peer review, to be able to go to at least a couple of other sites and see what it looks like. I mean, I don't think that would be that hard to see what it looks like on a Tuesday morning or a Saturday morning and see if it's there. And if it's at the Bridge Street site, as you say, and that's moving vans, and we don't have moving vans here, that's a obvious difference, but I for one would like to see that. So I guess the question is an answer is that something that can be got all this done in house? Can you contract that out quickly so we can get the information before the 28th of June? What's the way to go here?
We can get that information prior to the 28th, and I just want to confirm that we'd be presenting it in a written format and the planning department would do the presentation. I wouldn't necessarily have somebody, a professional, come and present it. They would write a report based on their analysis, and it'll be attached to our memo.
Is that, Mr. President, is that good with you? Councilors, does that meet your needs in terms of the... Yes, Councilor Albright, I'm sorry.
I think we should clarify what it is we want to collect for data and what we want to analyze. We want to look at traffic counts at various facilities. Is that one thing we want to do? We want to look at proposed... I think counts is really what you're talking about, because there is a traffic study that we do want to do. There's people who have talked about traffic in the area and the problems, and we do want to talk about a traffic study of the area, but I think you guys are talking about traffic counts. Am I right?
At least I'm talking about what does a self-storage facility generate?
Exactly.
And is it consistent with what the petitioner is telling us, or is it something different?
Okay.
And what is it like at 6 or 7 in the morning, and are there trucks lined up to get in, or is that not in fact the case?
Right. That's fine.
Does that work for you?
Yep.
Councilor Lipoff and Coden.
I just want to suggest to my colleagues that you go to the Needham Street facility, go around the corner to EMS, sit in front of the facility, and do your own due diligence. We drive by everything that we vote on, and this one is really important. So, you know, to me, this facility matches that one the best. You can go to Bridge Street, just do your homework on what else is there.
But just go and sit for a half an hour and check it out. See the kind of traffic that's coming by. Go into the facility, ask your questions, do some due diligence.
Officer Cody, did you want to add something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to basically say what Councilor Liplock just said, that we have to compare apples to apples here. And I was a little concerned earlier in the conversation tonight that we started talking about storage facilities and we were kind of throwing them out randomly. And I think that, you know, whether it goes either way, either side, I think the attorney for the petition presented what the type of storage facility is, and if people in here don't understand it, they need to go look at it, you know, because there is a huge difference between the roll-up garage door ones, which are designed for contractors and landscapers, whoever else it may be, versus the residential design ones, which, like Council Liplock, I used one one time after I moved out of the house, and, you know, we kept it for a year. I visited the day I put the stuff in, and the day I left. You know, I really didn't want to see it in between. So there is a huge difference, and it wasn't my clothes, so I didn't have to worry about not changing, so I didn't have to comment. So I think what we need to do is just make sure that we ensure that we're doing apples to apples.
Councilor Auchincloss, then President Lennon, and Councilor Albright.
I would encourage the committee to drop the requirement for the green roof. I don't think it's practicable. I was convinced by Councilor Crossley's articulate email earlier this afternoon that it's just not a reasonable requirement. It's not something that we would want.
President Lennon?
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify a couple of statements that I made in reference to the hours of operation and the type of contractor storage. So today I did take the time to do some due diligence and I went over to Medford Self Storage, okay? And they are not the drive-up, roll-up garage. They're only open at 8 a.m. They're a building, and they're looking to expand. Granted, they're not as big as what's being proposed here. However, what the manager who was there, who happened to be a Newton resident, was telling me was that there are other facilities in the area of where I work. I'm work over that way. That are also not the garage roll-up that do have that because they rent earlier. So I am going to go to both of those facilities and find out what it is that they're actually doing, and I'd be happy to share all that information with all members of the committee. So in total, I'm very familiar with Bridge Street after growing up on it for 30-plus years, but I think it might be helpful to the committee if I can put something even in writing of those three facilities that I visited that are outside of Newton as well. So I'll encourage that,
President Lennon. I think that'd be great. I think our individual research is critically important. I do think having some kind of professional research to buttress that or add to that is useful.
And sorry, and just in fairness, so if we're trying to keep a little balance, I was at the Medford storage facility from 1:45 to 2:15 talking to the manager, sure. And two people came in.
Fair enough. Councilor Albright.
So I wanted to deal with the issue of hours of operation as well, because a gentleman spoke to us saying that he was in the field, and he said that if we crunch the hours of operation, that we're likely to have more cars during peak hours. And so I would hope that whoever we get to do this traffic count could look at storage facilities of various hours of operation and see if that bears fruit. People that open at 6 versus people that open at 8, does it make a difference?
Okay, great, good idea. So, yes, Councilor Schwartz.
There were just a couple of other issues that were raised. I think we just want to get answers from the appropriate bodies on. One was the fire concerns. I think, you know, as always, we do usually see something from the fire department commenting on their signing off basically on a project that it's going to be safe and they can access all sides of the building adequately. So I would be looking for that if it's not already in the packet. I didn't see it. I think you've already touched base on the access road. I heard a lot of comments about FAR and how it's a huge ask, and that was my initial concern as well. But then I also recall the petitioner making the presentation that if the building were moved, I don't know, 10 feet, I think it is, or 20, towards Lewis Terrace, it would actually meet the FAR, but because much of it would be underground, but that would take away the the more trees and would create a problem with the brook or something to that effect. So I'd just like to see that revised and clarified. The other issues, I think definitely traffic, we've already talked about that, the hours. I just want to make another pitch for understanding the parking a little bit more. There are some waivers that are being requested here. There has been the representation that that other sites of this size, other storage sites this size, similar design and similar function, have more parking on site. I'd like to know more about that, especially the given concern about the trucks and the length of the duration of the visits, because that was, I think, raised by a couple of speakers, and that had also been one of my concerns.
Okay.
Thank you.
So let me just add to that list. As far as the green roof goes, I certainly understand that Councilor Crosley and Auction Clause are not in favor of it. I think Councilor Leary and I have expressed support for it, as have you in the planning department. I'd like to see, for our next time, a more robust explanation of why you think it's appropriate and what costs might be involved in doing it, if you can do that, and what the advantages are and what the disadvantages are, so we can make a better determination as to whether it's something that, despite the petitioner's opposition to it, we might consider putting as a condition. But I personally don't want to do that without having your professional guidance here as to the merits or lack thereof of it. So that's something I think would be very concern. We did not discuss, folks, the lighting. I think there's some back and forth about whether we have security lighting or less intrusive. I don't want to take the time to discuss it now, but I think that's something we can deal with on the 28th. Let me just make sure I covered my other notes here. And I'd also like on the 28th for you to just be prepared to comment more formally on the landscape plan as it's been submitted and your professional judgment as to what you think of that plan. Councilor Cody, is there something you want to add?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just let me seconding Councilor Austin-Cross comments on the green roof, and Councilor Crossley is not here. I don't think from a committee perspective we should be getting into telling people what their roofs look like other than the normal, because we're seeing house roofs being like altered like crazy all over the city right now. And when people come in to do these type of things, I don't think we should have the opinion. I don't mind the green roof. I think it would be a great idea, but if there's so many reasons why it wouldn't be effective to do, I don't think we can, you know, as a committee, start mandating people change their roofs and put in what we want to see. Although I would agree, but I just also can imagine this thing will look like a desert landscape in about 5 years because of maintenance issues and such. So I think you're better off getting a nice, well-designed, aesthetically pleasing roof, because that would be the thing that you could actually maintain, something that's actually put up and physically there. You know, other than that, we start getting into the business here of designing roofs for people and telling them what they should do. It's going to get a little bit out of control.
Councilor Albright?
So I drove up to the top of Newtonville Avenue and then drove back down to see what does it look like when, you know, how much this roof are we going to see? Because that, I think the issue is the impact of the top of the roof, whether it's green or pink or whatever it is. And a suggestion I might have is, could we bring this to the Urban Design Commission and ask their opinion of what's the best way to mask this roof? Is it a green roof? Is it a white? Was it a color? I think that's a question that can help us with.
Let's get some expertise if we can use it. Okay. Anything else? We're going to hold this. Now, I'm going to keep the public hearing open, but on the 28th, I am going to urge people, and I mean urge people, to restrict whatever comments you have to the remaining issues that are before us. And, we will not have repetitive comments because we need time as a committee to give careful attention to the proposal. We need to decide the pros and cons of it. I expect we're going to have a motion to approve this petition, and we're going to vote that up or down. But part of that is obviously crafting a board order, and we try to do that with some care in this committee. I'm not closing the public hearing. Nope. Okay. Any other comments right now? All right, seeing none, we're going to hold this item. We're going to take it up on June 28th. It's my strong anticipation an expectation. We're going to vote on it that evening. Okay? Thank you very much. We'll take a minute till we get to the last item.
Guys, we have a little bit, we have just one more petition to address tonight, so everybody can take their places. Places, gentlemen and ladies.
Sure.
I know the chair is about to go home, but we have one more item. Great. Thank you.
Let's go.
All right. We have our last item of the evening. Thank you for everybody who stayed. This is the 288 Walnut petition for the daycare, and I think we held it at the last meeting. I believe the public hearing was closed. So at this point in time, if there's a motion to dispose the item, motion to approve from Ward 2 Councilor Jake Austin-Gloss. There was a follow-up memo that was presented by the that was prepared by the planning department. Would you like to just quickly run through your comments about the parking as well as any other issues?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. This was the revised site plan that the petitioner's attorney distributed prior to last meeting's and it shows the addition of 5 spaces to the northern part of the site between the building and the turnpike. These stalls are non-compliant with the dimensions of the ordinance. So the planning department is weighing the question of leaving the full 5 stalls or approving the revised site plan with the stalls that are non-compliant. The concern is that the 5 stalls are make it difficult for maneuvering, but also these 5 stalls will take the parking off the street and relieve the needed stalls of that otherwhere in the neighborhood.
Okay, so I read your memo and I was a little bit curious where you ended up. So does planning have a recommendation on this? Are they usable even though they come under the required dimensions, or is there a concern that they're not even usable in that form?
I believe they are usable with coordination. It will be the planning department's recommendation to approve the waiver of the 5 stalls and also approve the revised site plan. That way the petitioner has the waiver and can create the additional parking on site to house the remaining 5 stalls.
Okay. Does the petitioner want to... Oh, sorry. Councillor Albright?
So I drove over there the other day and I was looking... all the stalls seem to be assigned to people. Mm-hmm. I don't know which stalls are the ones that you guys will be using.
And the petitioner's attorney, Terry Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The stalls that were created were there were 2 parallel parking stalls here, but actually the stalls themselves are compliant. They're 9x21, which is the dimensional standard for parallel parking. We don't have the aisle width, of course. We actually only propose 4 spaces, not 5, although it looks like 5. This is the 5th space, which we know can't be used if the other spaces are used. So there's really only 4. These 2 here, which we do believe is sufficient area behind to back out and then head out from these 2 spaces. These spaces are permanent because they would be assigned to people working in the building. It's typical that you allow permanent spaces where you know that both of those spaces are being utilized by a single entity that can control their management, and I think that's what the planning staff was alluding to when they talked about managing the spaces. So there really are 4 spaces. The way that we came into the project where we believe that that our traffic management plan and our circulation pattern and our analysis of this usage compared with uses in other locations of similar comparable locations, that we should have this operation function smoothly with a waiver of 5 parking spaces. And we largely based that on the assessment done by our consultant, Planning Horizons, that many of these spaces here, both in the morning and at the drop-off time, are vacant. They're just, if you go there, you'll see at the time when people will be dropping the kids off in the morning, those spaces are that, you know, those 9 spaces, many of them, are not filled. So that's the reason why we came and asked for a waiver on that number. We still believe that would work, but in an attempt to respond to the constructively to the criticism in the planning memo, that's why we tried to find some space to park extra cars on site. So our preference would be to give us a waiver of the number of spaces with the flexibility to use any additional spaces that we might be able to create.
And just to clarify, did you say that both of those angled spots would be able to be head up?
Yeah, these 2 spaces here should be able to back out. You've got enough clearance where you can back out and then head straight out into the street.
So they wouldn't have to back out all the way to the street.
The only people that might have a difficulty in that regard, these spaces here, but then again, depending upon the time, when not everyone's going to be leaving at the same time necessarily. If these spaces are not occupied, then these cars can then back in there and go out this way. So really, that's why it does require management of those spaces.
Okay. Councilor Albert.
So I was there at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and all those spaces were parked up.
On Bower Street?
Yeah, in front of the building. So I don't know how you're going to handle pickup and maybe even drop-off. I wasn't there in the morning.
Well,
all those spaces are parked
up. The pickup happens over a range of time.
I know, but there was no place to stop. There was literally no place to stop. There's no blue zone.
The pickup time is a range from 4 to 6.
I get that, but I saw all those spaces parked up.
Okay.
So, Attorney Morris, is the petitioner's position that if those spaces are parked up at either the drop-off or the pickup time, that the parents will double park briefly while the children are taken out or in, or will they try to find parking elsewhere and then come in on their own?
No, I think what would happen is this, and you recall, we'll talk about traffic management plan. There will be a staff person required to be driving that sidewalk during the times of drop-off and pick-up to manage the system. And I call your attention to what's going on. You might be more familiar with it at Cabot School now. They have hired a person to be there during exactly those times. And I can tell you from first experience, he's basically advises people, you can't stop in the middle of the street and discharge people in between parked cars. So I think we would follow that model and have that person perform the same function here as you see performed at the Cabot Public School. If you do, people will have to circle around again. That's what we have to do at Cabot. We have to go around and then come around again until the spaces open up, and the spaces typically open up.
Okay, so just your answer would be that they would have to circulate again.
Yes, exactly. That would be our plan.
Or find parking somewhere else.
That's correct.
Okay. Councilor Cody. Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. So the question is, we know the parking situation today based on what is happening today, and I believe that the spaces are pretty much open, and I've seen that, but I don't know about the evening time. However, we do have another elephant in the room here, that we have a lot of development going on in that spot. I'm not sure when that's going to actually start, next year or whatever, but the Office Street project goes, all that street parking is going to be, you know, premium parking. It's going to be very hard to get. So I think from a committee perspective, we really have to kind of weigh that in planning, have to think about that, of what to do for the next couple of years when that parking is probably going to be either put as no parking or to be put down as it's just going to be booked.
Well,
so I think there's an issue that we have to kind of think about. So.
There's a couple of options. One is that we might approach the city, and in fact, our consultant did try to approach the city about the possibility of renting those spaces during certain periods of time, if need be. But the more important thing and the more immediate response is that we have agreed to a 6-month look-back provision, and it has been emphasized with my clients and the tenants, prospective tenants, that those 6 months will be critical to assessing the operation and making sure things run smoothly, because we don't want to be back there with a lot of unanswered questions.
Can I just follow up on that? So if, let's say, at 6 months it's not working, what's the fallback? What's the potential? I would think that you've already got people enrolled, so that's not, you can't shut down. What's going to be the option?
I'm reminded that, in fact, my client does have a lease to use 20 parking spaces across the street, and they do have the flexibility in dealing with the other tenants in the building of moving spaces around to accommodate on-site parking, if need be, for the daycare use.
And how many more spots are there at the building?
That's right. There are a total of 11 spaces behind the building proposed.
Is that including the 4 that you had mentioned for staff?
Including the 4, yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Councilor Albright.
So I don't vote on this committee, but I think you need to find an alternative drop-off and pick-up. Drop-off in the morning, maybe it's not parked up over there. But I think you need to find an alternative plan for pickup, because I don't think this one's going to work.
I mean, cars are going to park there. Unless you stop people from parking in that row of cars, you're not going to be able to let people just pick people up there.
Well, that's the main entrance to the daycare is right there. So we can't move the drop off and pick up.
Maybe you could make the pick up. It didn't seem like there were very many cars parked further east on Bauer. Maybe
back here.
Maybe that could be your backup plan because it was emptier there than right in front of the building.
Want to respond to this? That traffic consultant, Lou McCurry.
Just want to mention that the nine spaces include, I think, there's six right on Bowers, per se, say. No, thanks. Right here. There's five or six here. If you go here, back Bauer, back this way, there's about there's three more. So those are always open. I mean, maybe you didn't see that today, but...
No, I did see the ones back there open.
Yeah, that's
but
included.
I saw no spaces open in front of the building.
Okay, so that was definitely a departure from the six times we was out there. So I don't know.
Sorry.
Yeah, it can happen, but... But there's definitely three... There's three here that are just never, ever used.
We could move it to that corner right there.
Yeah. If needs... I mean, it's open anyway.
We could create a loading zone right at that corner, since there seems to be a general consensus that the spaces here at the crucial times are vacant. We could move the pickup from here to this corner here, where we have more direct access, and actually shuttle the cars in, you pick up, you go. Similar to what I described in my opening remarks when we talked about access and drop off at the Fezzerman day camp, where they have a continuous run of cars and they have staff people there performing that function.
I guess one concern, I don't know if you guys have addressed, I think we raised this last time though, is that the age is different. I mean, the day camps are usually elementary school and up. This is, we're talking about nursery school, nursery to 5 year olds. So I know that you've done this in a couple other places, but it's quite different. So you're still planning on the nursery, the kids in the toddlers to be brought in by their parents, right? I think you had said that the first year would not expect the parents to drop off.
I think probably one of the solutions, and I admit that I'm thinking extemporaneously here. There are three spaces right here, and as my client has indicated, landlord has indicated, there's some flexibility in basically reallocating those spaces, people who use those now, to across the street. If need be, we could, we could reserve some of those spaces, two, three, there are four spaces right there, actually, reserve those in immediate proximity to the entryway for short-term parking for pickup. Yes.
Okay. Councilor, President Lennon.
Well, before Attorney Morris has offered that, which I think is a decent solution, what I was going to suggest, and again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, just to open this, would you be open to not only the 6 months, but maybe a year look back, two look back? And the reason why I suggest that is after 6 months, if there is a potential issue, we can address it then and try to solve that in the next 6 months and come back and say we've addressed it or not. Do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to put extra burden on you, but it may show the committee that after 6 months there isn't an issue, or if there is, this committee needs to work with you to try to address it, come back 6 months later and see if we've actually addressed it.
I think
people open to that? Or?
Yes, I think Mr. President's reservation set the suggestion, and as I see, I got a sense for my clients to do that.
It's also reasonable, I guess, given that the weather might be different after 9 months. I mean, 6 months, you're right in the middle of the winter, so. It won't snow, though, so there won't be a problem. Another issue that was raised by the planning department in a memo, I don't know if you want to speak to this, Neil, was the play safe.
Yes, there's another item on the revised site plan is the outdoor play area, roughly 4,700 square feet along the frontage of Walnut Street. It is enclosed with a wrought iron fence. There are several play structures shown, and this area will have to be in compliance with
Office of Child Care Services.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it wasn't clear to me from your memo, did you feel that that was going to be something that could be in compliance with the standards easily, or were your implication that it was not?
I just got to note the what's in the area and that the ultimately that call is not, that is a different body's call.
So you made a comment that there were some features in that area currently that would have to be changed for the implication?
Not exactly. I was just noting that there are trees, concrete steps, concrete walkways, things like that in the play area.
So is that a consideration that if the Office of Child Services requires those to be removed, that you're ready to do that?
Well, Neil and I spoke about this. I pointed out to him that I thought there was a misprint, miscalculation in the play space. We had actually had our surveyor break out three different areas, elements here, here, and here. All of this is the play space in front of the building. That totals 4,700 square feet of play area. If you subtract the walkway, it's still over 4,000 square feet. And this is enough to meet the standards of 75 square feet per child.
So the walkway would be separated from those two spaces that they like.
The walkway could, I mean, the walkway, I don't think the walkway needs to be removed. I mean, of course, we're going to have to comply with the requirements of the Office of Children with respect to play space, the standards, but I'm not so sure that it would require the elimination of that hardscape.
Okay. And then screening and fencing were also mentioned in the memo. Are those going to have to be changed, or are they already?
As I said in my remarks 2 weeks ago, there's a very attractive wrought iron fence that looks to be a period fence that was, you know, erected when it was used as a church. We don't propose to change that. We are aware that there are concerns in fencing that you don't have wide open things for kids to put their heads through. So we have suggested the installation of some interior mesh inside that fence that will still not detract from its historical appearance, but yet provide a practical safety, address the safety concerns for kids who are using the space for play.
Sounds all right.
So this, I'm sure, is in the children's licensing area, but are you going to block off the stairways from access to the children? Because you can go up that stairway and then jump over the sides. I'm sure it looks like a lot of fun, but probably not a good thing to have.
Since that's a good question, Susan. Since that stairway is largely ceremonial entrance, it would not be a problem to basically restricting access to the stairs.
Yeah, and both sets of stairs. The one on the north side and the one on the west side.
Right. Over here.
And there's also a embedded light fixture in the ground. You should probably take that out.
Okay. I have to confess I'm not being...
I almost fell into it, so I know it's there.
So there's one last issue that I had identified that from my last meeting, which is the left turns onto Bowers from Newtonville Ave. I know that the plan was at least presented that the two staff members who are out doing the drop-up and pick-up would try to enforce that, especially if they move further towards the pike near the turn in Bowers. That seems to be less doable. What is the plan there?
The plan, we can use a number of devices to do that. I mean, certainly we intend to put it in all of the literature that advertises the enrollment in the tiny tots. But to have all prospective parents and families aware of the traffic circulation, how to approach the site. We think this is critical, to have the traffic approach the site from Bowers Street proceeding west. One of the elements we could do is basically put a sandwich board on the corner that basically says, you know, do not enter during certain times, or something that's informational on a daily basis, in addition to what we put in the literature that forewarns people about how they should be conducting themselves when coming to and from the site.
Okay.
So I just wanted to go through those so that we can run through the board order quickly. Are there any other concerns raised by the councilors? All right, so we have a council order, Neil, that we can go through. So let's look at the findings. We had a motion from the councilor at large from Ward 2, who's on the committee. So number one, let's read through this together. Use will not adversely affect the neighborhood. Everybody okay with that one? Number two, the proposed waivers of parking and screening requirements do not create a nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. We're talking about a waiver of 5 parking, is that right? How many, what's the waiver?
5 stalls and a buffer along the outdoor play area.
Oh, okay, so we are waiving a buffer?
Yes.
Of what? What's the buffer usually? Like trees?
I think it's a 4-foot vegetative buffer.
Okay. And that's not required by the Office of Child Care Services, it's just something that's required by our ordinance?
I can't say if it's required by the Office of Child Care Services, but it is required by our ordinance. I believe it is a Dover waiver.
Okay. Number three, literal compliance with the parking, vegetative buffer, and pickup drop-off stall requirements are impractical due to the location use. Therefore, these exceptions will be in the public interest. So this is just a finding. Obviously, it doesn't have much holding, but that's the beast. That's the reason why we're going forward with this. Okay, let's go to the conditions. Oh, I'm sorry. Number four, daycare use. Consistent with the comprehensive plan. Good. Okay. So moving on to the... Any concerns about the findings? Councilor Cody? No? You're thinking about it. I saw that. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's... I think we have to address that in the conditions. All right. So the plan referencing conditions, standard building permit condition, standard final inspection, specific occupancy condition, and then number four, daycare limited 60 students on site. Need to seek an amendment for more. Everybody okay with 60? I believe it's 75 per kid. So 60 times 75 is what? 4,000. Right?
What was the question, Mr. Chairman?
I think that Councilor Cody was asking whether how the number matched up with the requirements of the play space, which I thought you had said
75 per child, that's correct.
So 4,000, so
plus more than that, 4,500.
It's also the number and age of the children dictates the amount of employees. So 60 students, as the enrollment is expected, dictates the 12 employees. So that's the parking as well.
Okay. Next condition. Number 5. Howdy. Oh, thank you. So this is the one for drop off and pick up. This would be the place where we would, I think, perhaps add some of the concerns or conditions that have just been discussed. The petitioner employed 2 staff members to assist with drop off and pick up. Do we want to reference a pickup plan or a traffic management plan? Or it seems like we've done a lot more discussion about this than this reflects, and petitioners kind of committed themselves to addressing pickup and drop-off in a more complete way. I mean, so should we say something about the plan on Bowers, that it'll be... If there's not enough space on Bowers, that the other parking spaces will be utilized?
I think you have to be very careful that when you're doing the drop-off that we not allow it at all in Newtonville. Because I have personal experience about 22 years ago. My wife was dropping off the kids and got the door knocked right off the Suburban. Kids could get killed. It was like very quick. And it was just the same, very similar setup. The drop-off was right there. Woman came by, wanted to say it was a winter issue, windshield wasn't cleared off. She drove right through the door of the Suburban, knocked it right off. So I think if we make sure the school does not allow that absolutely at all,
on Newtonville. That's where you have the traffic come flying through.
Is there a reference that we can make to the petitioner's submission about how they're planning to make this work so that it's in the...
You could reference the parking management plan and then put an additional requirement that it be distributed biannually to families within the school so that we know that they are messaging that constantly. And then mm-hmm. condition number 6 deals with if it's not working. And as opposed to staying in the board order where alternative locations sure. are, I'd prefer to have the flexibility to deal with that when and if we need to.
President Lennon, did you have a comment? Oh, sorry. Did you have it? President Lennon.
I just wanted to clarify, and I apologize because I was reading and talking as Attorney Morris was trying to explain. Can you just clarify the issue about the short-term spaces? That was at the same time I was trying to interject about the 2-period look back. So could you just show again what you were talking about for the short-term spaces and the power?